Okay, thank you. Welcome to this October 12th meeting of our expanded budget committee. This is our first foray into the deliberative stage of our budget process. This is the hard part, because this is where we have to face the fact that we very likely have many more needs than we have resources with which to respond to them. And we realize that we have to make tough choices by majority vote, and every dollar we choose to spend on a particular OTR is a dollar less that we have to spend on the others. And we have to do this when we can very easily have 14 different sets of priorities. It's a 14-person zero-sum game, and it's a recipe for disappointment. When we finish this process, some or all of us will be disappointed. I only hope that we will be only disappointed that the outcome wasn't exactly what we wanted, and not disappointed in the process, in our colleagues, or in ourselves. That's the appropriate outcome of a healthy compromise. I want to stress that this stage of the process is deliberative. The dictionary definition of deliberation is long and careful consideration or discussion. The definition does not include argument. So please expect that we will have differences of opinion, and really listen to each other's opinions respectfully. And I mean really listen. Don't sit there listening for points that you can debate the next time you raise your hand. Let's try to disagree without being disagreeable. We've had a long weekend to consider the OTRs we'll be voting on in this stage, and we've seen plenty of emails flying back and forth about certain of them for a couple of weeks now. I expect that most of us have pretty definite ideas about what we're going to support and what we won't, and very few minds will be changed by our debate. For this reason, I seriously considered limiting the number of times any one of us can address any one particular issue. Our own rules are silent on this issue and refer us to Robert's rules. And Robert's rules say that a person can speak to a single issue only twice in a single meeting. Who knew? So I'm not going to limit you all to two speeches per OTR, but I am going to suggest that you try to limit yourselves to three. If you cannot make your position clear in three tries, I doubt you're going to make it any clearer in four or five or six. I do reserve the right to not call on anyone who consistently tries to speak more than three times on each OTR. In this connection, I refer you all to Rule 5 of our legislature rules, which allows any one of you to take an appeal from my decision not to call on someone. Such appeals basically ask, shall the ruling of the chair be overruled? And it calls for a roll call vote of the members present without debate. I'm just trying to lay out the ground rules of this to be fair to you all, to give you fair warning. And my only concern in any of this is that our process is efficient and fair. We will be voting on the OTRs in the order in which they appear on the most recent list that Daniel Nolan sent us this afternoon. This starts with a housekeeping OTR, as is our usual practice, and I thank Martha for pointing that out to me because I didn't know. And then it takes the remaining OTRs in descending order of magnitude. This will allow us to budget our time so that we can spend the time necessary to address the OTRs that will have the biggest impact on our budget and on our fund balance. First, though, staff will inform us as to what our anticipated unassigned fund balance will be, net of the monies to be expended in Lisa's recommended budget. This will be our starting point for determining what our unassigned fund balance will be as we vote on each OTR that may or will reduce our fund balance. So with that, I hope you'll appreciate that we're not here to argue about how much we have in fund balance. We are here to just have a starting point so we can proceed to consider our OTRs in the context of our total budget and our fund balance. So I think Lisa has sent us some information on fund balance, and she will be filling us in on what we need to know. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you, Madam Chair. probably an hour or so ago, emailed the group the status of the estimated unassigned.
Is there a way to make that louder? I don't know. Is there?
For me to be louder?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're at 100%. Use your outdoor voice, Lisa.
Okay. I will try my best. Is that any better? Okay. So I just sent you all our best estimates as to the net unassigned general fund balance at the close of this year and at the close of 2022 as budgeted. So, and I just want to briefly go over how we've arrived at this figure, and I'll just state that Dan Nolan and myself went through these numbers and confirmed them with Rick Snyder, our director of finance. So we all are in agreement that these are the best estimates that we have at this time. So at year end 2020, our certified unassigned general fund balance was $47,997,368. And then we went through and listed all of the known withdrawals that we have taken from that figure. Approximately 1.13 million was taken to balance the 2020 budget. So that was taken out in this year, 2021. Other uses of fund balance.
Pardon me, can we ask to do a screen share or what she's talking about?
Oh, would that be helpful? I'd be happy to.
Probably.
Sure.
Thank you.
And this references section 2, page 36, is that right? Or is that sort of from that?
It's an updated.
I think it's a little more detailed. No, I know it's updated, but that's kind of the frame.
More or less, yes. It provides some more detail from that. Yes. And if you give me one moment, I will share my screen. Are you able to see the Excel spreadsheet that I'm referring to now?
Yeah, if you could make it a little bit larger, I don't know if that's possible. I've got one on my desk, so I'll follow along there. I'm the farthest away from the screen.
Okay. Let me just see. Zoom share.
Lisa, in the bottom right corner of your page, you should be able to click the little plus button next to 100%.
Yep. Did that help?
Yes.
Okay, fantastic. Okay, thank you. Sometimes it takes a village here. So we're starting with the unassigned general fund balance at the end of the year 2020, $47.997 million. And then we're subtracting the following in 2021. About $1.13 million was used to balance the 2021 budget as determined in last year's budget process. $3 million was set aside for the purchase of the Tioga Street property and $250,000 for public safety building improvements. Let's see, the estimated use of rollover in the current year is $393,000. And then we're expecting, as per our finance director's recommendation, to replenish the contingency fund for the remainder of 2021, $1.6 million. So all of those amounts lead us to the estimated general fund balance at the close of 2021 to be $41,622,132. Then what is included in the 2022 budget for the recommended rollover and one-time totals? $1.8 million and the capital recommendation for 2022 is $3 million. So with those budgeted in and those known quantities in the 2022 budget, that would take us down to the close of 2022 at $36,821,550. That's how those figures were arrived at.
Okay. Martha, do you have a question?
Yes. Hi, Lisa. Thank you very much for this. So in order to figure out, so looking at estimating that by the end, a year from now, we'll have $36.8 million, can you give us a sense of, well, either for the 2021 or 2022 numbers, what's the general fund revenues number so we know what 18% of that is? Like, our target is 18% of the general fund revenues, right?
Correct.
It's the actual revenues at year end, Martha. So
right. Well, so in order to on page in our budget book, that's $138.5 million.
So no, it's I was told it was 188. Four 607. That's
all right. I'm asking Lisa. So what do we? How do we get the? How do we know what 18%? The 18% target is, what's the number that equals 18%?
For 2021.
Well, yes. And for or 2020. I guess we don't know that for 2022 because we don't know the revenues, right?
Yeah, our best estimate right now, because we won't know the actuals until further on into 2022, is to use the estimated the estimated or budgeted total for 2021, which is $188,804,607. And I'm getting that from section 2, page 2 of the budget book.
Okay.
So that's where I've gotten that figure for the 2021 budget and also for the 2022 budget.
Can you repeat that figure, please?
For the 2021 budget, the figure that I'm looking at from section 2, page 2 of the budget book is $188,804,607.
So 18% of that.
Which is $33,984,829.
33,984,829.
I'm sorry.
33
what? 3.9. Rich, did you have a question?
I do.
We're going to have questions about this. We're not going to have debate.
Yeah, no, I have questions.
Okay.
Thanks, Lisa. I'm assuming, well, I guess I'm asking, is the assumption that additions to fund balance are zero in 2021 and 2022?
Yes, that's the part that's held constant, and that's the part that why this is an estimate, because we do anticipate that there will be changes, hopefully in our favor, and the revenues will increase. And so, but keep in mind, if revenues increase, not only will excess revenues may end up in our fund balance, but that also increases the denominator by which we are we calculate this formula. So as revenues increase, that bottom line.
Effectively, what you're showing us is the worst case scenario. Is that right?
I'm not sure that it's the worst case scenario because the denominator will continue to increase. So the number necessary to achieve the 18% will also need to increase.
Slowly.
But essentially you're saying we're anticipating zero contributions to fund balance to arrive at these numbers of $36 million and $41 million.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
And I'm gonna stop the share unless others are, so I can see better, if that's okay with everyone.
Yeah, that's fine. And I have to say that I'm not quite as concerned about the year-end 2022 numbers. I think for our purposes here today, we need to pay attention to the year-end 2021 numbers. And if we have additional revenues that come in, we're not going to know what those are until after the first of the year. So we can revisit this issue at that point. So, Martha.
Well, we do have information from a half a year so far for 2021, and as I emailed earlier today.
And as I said, we're not going to argue about the fund balance.
Okay. With respect, we've always really been relaxed about people getting and confirming information. So, for example, because using ARPA for capital, it's already been clearly stated, we will see an additional budget relief of $1.67 million a year. So not counting increases in deed transfer tax, clerk's fees, casino money, and sales tax, we will see that budget relief because of the earlier decision we made about ARPA.
Okay, thank you. All right, so now let's please move on to consider our first OTR, which is a housekeeping OTR. And I think that was introduced by Mr. John. Rich, would you like to move that?
I'm just looking for it on the sheet here.
It's at the top.
Oh, okay. Now, this is to change the Doer OTR from project manager to assistant director, ER dispatch, and increase salary to $34,642 and fringe to $17,900 to fix the error.
Can I get a second on that? Shauna seconds. Any discussion? Are we ready to vote? Okay, Kathy?
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich Dunn?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslie McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Schill?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
Okay, thank you. Oh, may they all go this easily. Mike?
Will we be having the screenshot like we have in past years of the change in the levy by the various actions we take? I realize we've got to have the gallery view, but from time to time, can we look at that?
Yes. Dan is at the ready with that spreadsheet and those formulas built in, so we can have it going. We can put it up now. We can do it on request, however you would like to proceed with it.
I mean, could we look at it now just so everybody will know what to look for from time
sure.
to time?
Yeah, Daniel can draw us a map.
Okay, so what does that do exactly? So, Dan, could you walk us through?
Oh, I'm glad that's not my desktop.
Hey, sorry, I had a hard time finding the controls for Zoom while simultaneously sharing. Let me put it back up. Ready? Go share. Okay, does everybody see everything?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
All right. Okay, so walking through the sheet right now. These are the tax calculations up at the upper left hand corner here for some static figures from the prior year involving the assessed tax of the base, the median home price for the prior year, and the tax cap for that year. This is the same figures for 2021, and here's a relative change. The impact of the approved amendments will be stated at the top. So as amendments get approved, as you will see over here, let me hide my Zoom box here. Over to the right, as these get approved, the number of the quantitative like change in the approval will come over here, and it will then be reflected up at the top. Right now, what we have is we have the 2021 tax levy, so the prior year, the current recommended budget, the levy increase over the current, the levy increase for the recommended budget over the prior year, and then in the white column, pardon me, we'll have the 2022 amended budget, or what will eventually wind up becoming your guys' adopted budget. So that's the change relative to from the adopted prior adopted budget to the current adopted. Here's a break.
A little bit bigger.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there'll be a lot of movement if we do that, but let me see if I can.
We'll try really hard not to get motion sickness.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's going to be a lot of zooming around, so I apologize.
That's better. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. So then here's the amended versus recommendation. So basically the recommended budget here, and then your guys' adjustments and changes. This would quantify what those changes are. Each of the categories would be the tax levy, the prior year your levy increase relative to the adopted budget, the tax rate, again, 2021 versus 2022, and then any additional changes, taxes on the median-priced home, the nominal value, not necessarily the rate, and then the change in the tax bill, the nominal value for the median-priced home. Draws on reserves would be draws on fund balance. The applied rollover will be there, and use of ARP funding is there as well. So additional, like, for example, if this Dewar amendment, which would be funded by ARP, which it was, once I approved it, because once you guys hit an approval, so if I put no, it will disappear from here. And if I hit yes, it will reappear and increase the value that we've had for ARP funds. That would be the case with everything.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for Daniel before we move on?
Should I leave it up?
Yeah, I just need to remind the folks that are attending remotely that I'm not going to be able to see their hands. So if they have a question, they may have to just sing out, okay?
Henry has his hand up.
Yeah. Oh, who has their hand up?
Henry.
Okay, well, so does Annie. So let's let Annie go, and then you can go, Henry.
Okay.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I just had a question for Daniel, and maybe he said this, that the change will only be for OTRs that are affecting, that are labeled as target funding, correct?
Nope. No? Every single thing will be reflected in this, all different changes will. So rollover OTR, additional rollover OTRs will be here. There's not, there's no, to my knowledge, yeah, there's no rollover, but ARP funded OTRs, they'll be reflected here, and draws on reserves will be reflected here.
Okay, they'll be reflected down there. Okay, thanks. I was having trouble following it. Thank you.
I know. I'm sorry. It's an imperfect kind of system, but we got some.
But if something comes out of reserves or ARPA, it doesn't affect the tax levy and the tax rate.
And it doesn't affect the general fund either. Yeah.
No, the only things that would affect the tax levy and the tax rate would be target OTRs. As you'll see over here, I'm sorry for all the zooming around, but as you can see, this is a target OTR, and it is the proposed impact on the levy is 3%. That's because this is a revenue, so that's actually a bad example. But here we go. This is a better one. This is a $50,000 target OTR. If it is approved, it would have a 0.1% impact on the tax levy.
Okay, Henry?
Yes. I was curious about the, from Lisa and Rick, the updates regarding casino revenue and sales tax. Because don't we usually have an update on where we exactly stand before we start voting on OTRs?
Well, I don't know that we'll know the final number until after the end of the year, Henry.
Right. But we can get an update in terms of the overall budget, in terms of whether things have changed in the last, like, 2 or 3 months, right?
I guess we could. I thought we had just received an update at the August meeting, September meeting.
Let me address that. We discussed it at the last legislative meeting when we said we would be bringing the next sales tax report to the next legislature meeting. We haven't gotten September's yet. And so we discussed that just last week. And I said the same thing about casino revenues. When we get them, it'll be shared with the legislature. That doesn't come until late October. And the room tax report I just got today from Lisa Schott and from Nick Hemholt, and that will be on next week's legislative agenda also. So if we have them all ready for you, next week is the earliest you'll be seeing those.
Okay. Thanks, Rick.
Mm-hmm. Martha? So I went back and looked at both the casino. I emailed this to everybody at 2:31 today. In addition to the increases on deed transfer and clerk's fees, casino money, as of the first two quarters this year, were already $258,754, more than the total 2021 budget. So that's as of June 30th. We're already $250,000 over budget. For sales tax, the first two quarters are almost $1.8 million over our 2021 budget for the first two quarters. So we are, you know, considerably ahead of our 2021 budget on sales tax.
Thank you. Okay, are we ready to move on? So next up, we have an OTR filed by Klein, Black, Dawson, McBean, Claiborne, and Corman. Dan, this is your baby, so I'll let you move it.
Thank you. I will speak to you in this in a minute, but I just want to note that Mike Sigler and Glenn Morey also asked to be included as sponsors of this. I think they emailed me directly, so if the minutes could reflect that, please.
Well, thank you, and welcome, Sigler and Morey.
So I'd like to move the amendment that draws funds necessary from the unassigned fund balance to cover all proposed 2022 levy increases.
And Shauna Black seconds that. So discussion. Dan, you kick us off, please.
I'll say a few quick things. First of all, this has usually come last in the budget process, and to me that made sense kind of mathematically and budgetarily. But I was advised that maybe psychologically, that wasn't the best thing, that it felt like we were trying to undo what had been done already. So that's why that's one of the reasons it's being introduced at the beginning this time. It's always pointed out that this is a risky budgetary maneuver, and it is. There can be no doubt about it. Many things, almost everything we do in a budget is a prediction, and it could be right or it could be wrong. So there's some risk involved. So I would characterize this as risky but not reckless. Because in the worst case scenario, if things do not play out in 2022 as we were hoping, we have the means to make those adjustments, right? We can tax more, we can cut expenses, we can draw from the fund balance further. So it's a risk, just like all budgeting is, but I do not think we're risking the financial standing of the county, you know, in any meaningful way. And then the last thing I wanted to say was, so this would bring the tax levy to zero. And I just want to say that zero, it doesn't mean your tax bill will change zero, right? There's other factors that affect your tax bills. I just want to make sure the public understands that. And also that in some ways that does make it symbolic. It's not, you know, it is just a number. It could have been a different way to calculate this tax relief to taxpayers. But in this case, it is somewhat symbolic, but I think it's a good symbol. I think it would send a very good message to taxpayers. It would be good news, and I think the public could use some good news this year. Thanks.
Thanks, Dan. I have Shauna and then Martha.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Whenever we started the budget process, and even before that, we received recovery funds, and the whole idea of our recovery funds was to invest those in our community and to do things that would help our community. The way that I see the best help for the most amount of people is by voting on this amendment. This would allow homeowners, as long as their assessment stays the same, for their tax rate to stay the same for this year. And this is a function that as a legislature, we can vote on. As a Democrat, you very rarely hear of Democrats either lowering the tax rate or keeping the same tax rate. But I think this is really our obligation to our constituents. I know that many people in this county have suffered through COVID-19. I know that even families that still have the same jobs that they had at the beginning have incurred costs with families. I know my family, we're paying more for internet. We're paying more for our electric and our heating. And my kids are home all the time, so I'm paying more for food. And it's those little expenses that are really adding up for our working families. So I do hope that my colleagues join us and we can pass this resolution. Thank you.
Okay, I have Martha, and then Brittany says we have somebody with a hand up. Is that Henry? Okay,
yep.
And then Mike Lane. Okay.
I have a couple of questions, and then, but first I would say when this came up in email this morning or whatever, I said I'm not opposed to doing something like this with a relatively small, 100, 200,000 or something at the end of the process when we're trying to hit a certain tax levy increase. This is not comfortable at all, but let me first ask, how did you come up with 1565? Because I don't see that number anywhere. And in other words, the whole expense column comes up to 1.38, not 1.565. So where'd that number come from? And then in particular, I really like to hear from Lisa Holmes on how what this would mean. The idea of filling a levy expense, which is recurring, with one time as in fund balance, what does that mean for next year? Knowing that that won't be my problem, but it will crowd out a lot of other things a year from now. So first to Dan, where'd the number come from? And then ask Lisa her comment.
I'll give it a shot. And Dan, Nolan, if you want to correct anything I say, please do. So that number is calculated by taking into account all the OTRs in the recommended budget and all the OTRs on this piece of paper in front of us. Add those two things together, and that comes to the 1.5 and change.
You mean, so all the recommended OTRs that are target?
Yes.
In the book, not the one-time spending OTRs?
Correct, just target.
Okay. Yeah, Daniel Nolan calculated that number for us because, of course, we tried to calculate it ourselves and missed the boat.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's just the change in the levy from the adopted budget prior to now, plus any target OTRs that are on this sheet.
For target, okay, thank
that's,
you.
That's literally it. It is just the subtraction of this number minus this number, plus any of these guys that are impacting target down.
But I'm sorry, and you went so fast. What were the numbers?
Oh, terribly sorry. I don't know if you can see my mouse. It is this number minus this number.
Uh-huh.
That's 1.4 plus. And then if you were to add essentially all of the, and I'm not going to do it because I'll be jumping all around, but if you were to add all the, not this one, but all the other target OTR amounts down here, that number comes out to $1,565,511.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Not a problem.
Okay. So I have Henry and then Mike Lane.
I'm sorry, I asked for Lisa's comments.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
I think, Martha, you spoke to this. Dan already spoke to it. There is a risk in doing that, or a caution in doing that, because it is using fund balance, which is a one-time revenue for a recurring expense. And there is a compounding effect of not increasing the levy this year. It will need to be increased next year by this amount.
Okay, then if I just one comment. If I will vote against.
I'm sorry, could you say that ending again, please? I didn't catch all of it.
I'm sorry if you're having trouble hearing me. I was just saying that there is a caution in doing it, and there a compounding effect of not increasing the levy this year. It will need to be increased next year by this amount, likely.
Just as a summary, I'm going to vote against this amount, but reserve the right to, perhaps at the end of the process, to propose a smaller amount.
Thank you, Martha. Okay, I've got Mike Lane and then Rich John.
Wait, did I skip
Henry? I'm sorry.
You did.
Well, Henry, okay. That's what you get for not gracing with us with your presence. But go ahead, please.
Yeah. So, Lisa, when you said that we're going to have to start with this levy next year, does that mean that to keep maintenance of effort next year, in theory, that we would have to, in fact, you know, basically recover this amount of money and go on top of that to do it?
We would need to find a revenue, increase revenue or decrease expense. I mean, there is precedent for having done it. We did that last year, $1.13 million, I believe, from fund balance. So that was taken from fund balance. But I believe that we decreased our contingency in the budget for that. We decreased an expense to make up that amount.
Okay. Okay, thanks.
Yep.
Okay, so I have Mike and then Brittany. You have somebody else? Leflin. In that order. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, it sure would be great to be able to support this amendment, but I can't. Yeah, it would be great to say, you know, no tax rate increase. We'll just dip in. But Lisa has just told us next year we got to start out covering this even before the levy increase we'll need for other things next year. The truth is the cost of local government, cost of any government, goes up every year. We're going to see more inflation this year during 2022. We're going to have labor negotiations. We're going to have people from our employee association saying that our costs are going up. We need more help. We're going to have agencies needing more money. We're going to have a lot of things that are going to happen. Our job as elected representatives, in my opinion, is to do our best with our budget and to try to keep the tax rate increases reasonably low. I think the 2.7%, which we talked about back when we had the initial budget conference early in April, or late in April it was, then I think that kind of makes some sense because we are going to see increases, as I have mentioned before. Once in a while, we've used a little bit. I think Martha's right. We used a little bit toward the end to shave a little off the tax levy, and that was not hard to recover. But to do this at this point, simply to say, see what I did for the real property taxpayers, as I said, sounds great. I wish I could do it, but I can't. And just remember, this is not giving a break to everybody. A lot of people in Tompkins County, probably the majority of people in Tompkins County, are tenants. And they don't get a break by our doing this. Yes, the real property taxpayers are the ones who are the key to the support of the county budget. But we shouldn't say that this gives a break to every taxpayer. It doesn't. So I can't support this.
Thank you. Rich and then Leslin.
Thank you. I voted for this in past years, but it's odd to me to be doing it out of order. It does seem like, considering this at the end, when we have a fuller picture of what we've done in our deliberative process, would be more comfortable. I agree with doing something in principle. I think I'm not going to support this. And I also have a question that in past years, we've gone through this process of analyzing our assumptions regarding sales tax revenue. And we didn't seem to go there this year. And I'm wondering, did that conversation occur and what was the result of that then?
Well, I guess my opinion is that when we do those kinds of sales tax adjustments, which I've done, it's kind of a game. We just say, oh, oops, let's change this number to this number. So I
agree.
Yeah, okay. So it sounds like we all agree. I decided this year just go right to the fund balance, the real number, and just say what we're doing. We're taking the money out of the bank with the assumption and the hope that we're going to do well enough next year that this amount of money is not going to be not going to hurt the county, not going to hurt our financial picture.
But Lisa has just said that we'll have a compounding problem we'll give ourselves next year.
So that has been true every year. Every year we do this. And almost every year for the last 10 years, including 2020, we ended up with a surplus. So just like any other budgeting, you're taking a guess, and you're taking a gamble, and if revenue comes in lower and expenses come in higher than you anticipated, then you have to make that up somewhere. It's always true in all budgeting, and that's all this is a budget number that we're using.
Yeah, I guess I'm troubled because our county administrator has just given us fund balance information that excluded any possible estimates of revenue. So we're now looking at a really grim drop in our fund balance. At the same time, we're presented with this OTR that draws further on fund balance, which makes me uncomfortable. That's why I'm not going to support it. I'm sorry.
Okay, I have Leslyn and then Martha and then Shauna.
Deborah, thank you. Dan said much of what I was going to say, and you know, this is a resolution that I and others, I think, at least in my own head, I intended to bring towards the end of the process because that's normally what we do. So Dan, I want to thank Dan and applaud him for just saying, let's just get it out the bat and see where it goes. So I am going to, if this doesn't get voted in favor of, I'm sure with others, we'll reserve the right to bring this in the end of our process, see where we are and move there. But Dan is actually right. Every year we go through this. Every year we have the same sort of reasoning of why we shouldn't. And every year, for a very long time, I would say, we have come in with very good surpluses in our year. So I think this is potentially a gamble we can take. So I just wanted to share those thoughts.
Thank you. Okay, Martha?
Well, I've looked at the list here of the target OTRs that we're proposing. It's $150,631. So that's really minor. So most of these are already built into the county administrator's budget. I think there's an unspoken something going on here, which is that instead of taking out a sales tax, the proposal is to take it out of fund balance when we've had a lot of conversation about OTR, about not approving any OTRs for the community because they should come out of the recovery fund at some future point when that is figured out, which right now we don't have a process, we don't have a consultant, we don't have the parameters, we don't know the eligibility, that we don't know the size of the potential grants. So there's frankly nothing we know about what the recovery fund is. So to take this out of fund balance when there have been a number of conversations about voting against all the community OTRs because they should be considered under fund balance of the recovery fund, but this would take $1.5 million out of fund balance, which threatens the recovery fund, frankly. I think that's a very unfortunate combination. I would, I'm planning to vote against this now, but I would, let me ask, if this passes as it, to take it out of fund balance, would it be in order to move to amend it to take it out of sales tax? How would that, or perhaps I should make that motion first. Although I'm not really in favor of that either.
Well, I think that it doesn't matter if we take it out of sales tax or fund balance. You've got one pot of money that everything goes into and everything comes out of. You know, and to Rich's point, we've painted a worst case scenario picture for what fund balance would be as of the end of the year. But I'm certainly not suggesting that there isn't going to be an excess of casino revenue and sales tax over what we budgeted that's going to result in a boost to our fund balance after the first of the year when we close the books and can figure out where we are. So I don't think it matters whether you say, okay, we're going to take this out of sales tax or we're going to take it out of fund balance. Eventually, sales tax ends up in fund balance.
Right. But the point is that people have pointed to the fund balance and said, oh, we better not approve any of these community OTRs because that'll reduce fund balance. Instead, we should put them all off into the $7 million recovery fund. So that's how they're related.
Well,
if people have decided not to take that position, then I'm fine, which is another argument to actually take this up at the end of the process rather than now.
Martha, those are apples to oranges. Like, come on. Those are two different things, and you're trying to raise that argument right now. They're two different things.
I'm sorry, this is what I've heard from a lot of people, so
you've misstated the reason that those of us who oppose some of these OTRs have made perfectly clear, which is that it's not fair to the organizations who do not have access to our budget process right now. They're not competing on equal ground because the organizations that do have access to the budget process get in first in line, and the monies that we give out to them in the budget process reduce the monies that are available for the CRP process.
With all respect, the people who have been part of our budget process took part in it before there was even a recovery fund. So it seems unfair to make them wait until the theoretical recovery fund eventually gets instituted, which, as I said, right now we have no information about what that is. When all these opportunities have been developed without any knowledge of a recovery fund at all. So I think that would really be changing the rules in the middle of the game. So, all right, I guess I'm done. I'm going to vote against this. And, at the end of the process, I'm willing to consider a smaller amount if we're looking at trying to bring a tax levy down to a certain point.
Okay, thank you, Martha. I think you've made your position very clear. We've got Shauna, and then we have Annie.
I think Rich.
Oh, Rich, did you have your hand up again?
I'm just so confused by the direction this is going. But hear from, who is it, Shauna and Annie?
Shauna and Annie.
So every single budget year, what it all comes down to is priorities, and it's the priorities that the legislature or the individual legislator sees as most important. For me personally, I'm accountable to the taxpayer, and if there is a chance and an opportunity as a legislator that I can help out our taxpayers, then that is absolutely what I would want to do. My second obligation is I feel, are Tompkins County employees. We have the opportunity right now to give back to our community. And I know, Martha, you mentioned the nonprofits and the other stakeholders that receive funding from the community, but we have received over $19 million of recovery or ARPA funds. And this is the one time that we can actually give back to our constituents by not raising their taxes this year.
Okay, so I have Annie. Rich, do you have anything more you want to say other than that you're confused?
I do.
Okay. So I have Annie and Rich and then Leslie.
Thank you. So in listening, I added my name to in support of this resolution, this amendment, I should say. And but in hearing the reasons from people of whether they're going to vote for it, against it, some have said that if we could have this later in the process, if we could, if this fails, maybe we, you know, some people would be for bringing up a smaller amount. So I'm going to see if there's some type of compromise that we could reach now, and I'm going to see if there's an appetite for amending this to 1 million versus 1.5 million. So I'm going to propose that amendment.
Okay, do we have a second on Annie's proposed amendment?
Second for discussion.
Okay, Mike Lane has seconded it for discussion. So does anyone have anything directed to the amendment? Are we, Mike?
A smaller amount is always better in this case.
Okay, that's a good point. Anybody else?
Henry. Hello. Do we know, can Daniel do the calculations to see what the tax assessment would be if we load it to $1 million?
Well, let's find out. It would reduce the levy by 0.79%. So again, there's some other things that impact the levy that are yet to be discussed. If I were to, let's just do that. Let's just say that they're all approved. All right. Assuming everything else gets approved, the tax levy would hold. The tax levy would be result at 1.08%.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, are we ready to vote on the amendment? Kathy?
Shauna Black?
I'm sorry, we're voting on the amendment?
Yes.
No.
Amanda Champion?
No.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
No.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
No.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Schill?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
No.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
9 ayes, 5 noes.
Okay, so now the main motion is, I don't know what it is. Now it's going to be to reduce the tax levy by moving $1 million of the cost of these OTRs in Lisa's budget. And is it the target OTRs, Daniel?
Yes.
Okay. To take $1 million out of fund balance to pay for
that. I still have hands up. I think. Brittany, was there anybody?
No.
No, okay. But I do have Rich. And Leslie, sorry.
Yeah, I guess I'd respond to Shauna's point that we always have to be careful about taxpayer money. That's what our job is. At the same time, I don't think we're going to take an approach that success is never raising taxes. What we have to do is a more complicated analysis of delivering value on the taxes collected. And toward that end, sometimes you have to raise taxes. I'm more comfortable with the amendment with Annie's proposal, and I'm debating whether to support it. But I do want to address the larger context of your comment, Deborah, regarding our OTR process, because it seems I've gone through this cycle 5 budgets before this one, and it was my understanding that we did consider member-filed OTRs involving community organizations. And this year, we seem to have introduced this idea that there's line jumping, and I don't know what that means. That's the source of my confusion, in that there seems to be this repeated statement that some organizations aren't able to make proposals. And I don't know which organizations those are and why they're excluded. You know, looking at the OTRs before us, I don't think they should be not considered based on some idea that there's something inappropriate with following the same policy and practice we've had every year prior to this one.
So if I may, I see you, Amanda, and Martha. If I may, this is a very unusual year because of the $20 million. And that changes everything as far as I'm concerned.
But if we have more money, why is it harder to consider the community agencies we've always considered?
Because we aimed to set up a process that allowed us to make grants to a wider community of organizations that aren't necessarily traditionally part of our budget process. No, that's all I can tell you. I guess there's more one way to view fairness, but I think we need to be ever mindful of the fact that even though there's a budget and a CRP grant program, they're both going to come out of the same pot of money. So everything you take out of that pot of money for the budget process is money that's not available for the other process.
And that was the point of my email earlier today suggesting, okay, let's address that directly. We've allocated $7 million for recovery fund. If we believe these are duplicative of the types of projects that might be approved sometime in the future when we do develop criteria, let's call it a drawdown from the recovery fund. I'm okay with that, but I'm not okay with us categorically saying we're not going to think about these projects at all in our budget process because there's a possibility that we will get criteria in the future at some time, and then we can go to these community agencies and say, well, you can apply in this different budget process. I'm afraid that we will lose momentum on ongoing operations at these agencies. I'm looking at, say, for example, the budget funding that came from recycling and materials management to the reuse center that was withdrawn because of the difficulties that recycling was having with the commodities markets. That has had real impact and it's ongoing. I'm not sure it's an adequate answer to say, well, try later, sometime later, and maybe the criteria will fit what you're desperately needing for your budget right now. I don't think that's an adequate answer.
Well, I'm not telling you that that's the way you have to vote. I'm just telling you how I'm going to vote.
Yeah.
let's see, who did I have next? Was it Leslie and then Amanda and then Martha and then is there somebody?
Henry.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm listening to everyone. This is my first time through the budget process, so I'm learning a lot, right? But I do feel like I'm hearing two philosophies toward this year's budget, obviously. And yes, more money has complicated it, obviously. I like the idea that Dan is looking to give back to the community and that so many legislators have supported an OTR that looks at reducing the tax levy. However, that's a very optimistic view given, some concerns that have been raised for the last several months about our position right now as a county government. And I say this in reflection to the recovery fund that we tried to bring forward to open up an opportunity for the community to bring forth their ideas, right, for grant-funded programs that could really make a difference locally in light of and in following up on, this time of recovery, if you will, from COVID and what that means to anybody individually or a business or a community agency. And we were trying to do that optimistically as well, saying we look like we have a healthy budget right now. We think we can afford this. But I feel like, and perhaps others are having a different perspective, that has been met with some concern and pessimism, more in the vein of being conservative with our finances. And so I see the two coming together, but not meeting up, right? So in one way, we're very concerned about setting aside money and or committing money toward the community grant program. It's good moving forward, but slowly, yet to be developed. So it's hard to know. Will some of these OTRs that are on the plate in front of us, will they qualify for some future recovery fund? We don't know. Will there be any money left if we get optimistic on one front, on the tax levy front, but not on the back end of the future recovery fund? So I'm just having trouble making these things jive and understanding. I'm willing to go with the group as we all look at this and really dig into the numbers and what we think we can afford and what is best for county government long term as well as for our community. But I feel like there are shifting sands depending on which thing we're looking at. And so folks have different colored glasses with different approaches. I'm just trying to, I'd love to hear from other people if this sounds like we have two tides running against one another. I'd like to bring them together somehow.
Thanks, Leslie. I wish I had an answer for you. Amanda.
I think Leslie might have said it more eloquently than I. Couple things. Did Annie's amendment also include moving this to the end of the meeting?
No.
Okay. So it's just changing the amount to 1 million. Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
I think that we all know how we want to vote, and trying to lecture each other about how you want it to be because you think that's the best thing for everyone is very tiresome for me. Just vote how you want to vote and don't give us lectures. I don't understand. If you have questions, if you want some clarification, but just because one of us thinks one way doesn't mean we all think that way. So if you want if your priority is to give money back to the taxpayer, then vote for that. If it's not, then don't. If your priority is to use the recovery funding and not fund some of these OTRs right now, that's okay. It's really okay. So I really wish that folks could just vote the way you want to vote and stop with the lectures. So I will stop lecturing you now and hope that we can get on with this.
Okay, Martha, then Henry.
So I think I have evidence that these debates matter. We already saw Annie just changed her thinking, and I've been changing my thinking as we're sitting here. So, and I'm hoping I'm going to make a suggestion that will really be a compromise. I would support the million going forward if, and I'm going to ask first the question to Rick or Lisa. So I'm looking at the budget summary, section 2, page 2. Under revenues, we get sales tax and unallocated revenue. It's so weird not to know where to look. is casino revenue in that column or in that line? Or is that other revenues? Where does casino live?
Martha, I off the top of my head, I can't tell you where that lives without doing a little more digging. I'd be happy to do that, unless Dan knows off the top of his head, Dan Nolan.
I believe it's an unallocated revenue.
So sales tax and unallocated revenue probably increases casino. All right, casino is included. If the following is available to make an amendment to the amendment, I would move, and then I'd like to explain it if I get a second. I would move that this million be taken out of that line, sales tax and unallocated revenue. And if everybody is confident that it really doesn't matter, then it would matter to me to take it out of there. So if I get a second, I have some other thoughts on it.
Point of clarification. I think, Martha, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think what you're saying is you would be suggesting moving to adjust the sales tax revenue projection. Is that correct? Can't take out of, I don't.
Yeah, right. So it would be a million. That's right. Good point. That would be adding a million to that number. So that 39.6 would be 40.6. Which then would have the result of reducing the tax levy. So if I get a second, I mean, I think because I've been arguing, you know, in email and just earlier today that I thought these revenues are in significantly better shape than we could have hoped for. So I think that 39.6 is really too conservative, and we could really do ourselves a very comfortable favor by increasing that to a million. And it would have the same effect as you've been pointing out.
Martha, can you restate your amendment, please?
So that keeping the number at a million, what I would do with it, I would ask to increase sales tax and unallocated revenue to $40,609,024. Not sure where that shows up on Dan's spreadsheet, but
it does not, because it is unallocated revenue.
Okay, but somehow it gets factored in. So revenues would show, it shows up. I'm sure it shows up somewhere. Dan's done this many times, right?
Can someone tell me what practical difference this makes? Because I really don't understand what's being requested.
Yeah, for what it's worth, it effectively does not.
I'm sorry, Daniel, you said it out.
Sorry, for what it's worth, budgetarily, it does not. If there's going to be an additional $1 million of revenue, which, again, we don't have any real way of knowing that, but if there is going to be, and it is in excess, it would be theoretically transferred to the fund balance at that point next year.
Right, but structurally, I mean, we always have our sales tax and unallocated revenue is always a projection.
Yes, and again, so if it gets projected higher, that's fine, but it would just go into fund balance.
The result is that it reduces the property tax levy that's required to pay for our expenses.
So does doing it this way. It's just, it's the same thing.
If I could interject, are we saying here we're talking about changing the projection for sales tax and casino revenues, which is a different category than, is that a different category than unallocated revenue?
Well, on this budget page, those two words, those two phrases are on the same line.
Yeah, the budget book, the way that the software and stuff does it currently, they combine those lines. They're both baked into that number.
I'm sorry, Daniel, I can't hear you.
Sorry, they're both baked into that number.
Point of order, there's not been a second yet.
Yeah, does anybody want to second this?
I'll second it for discussion purposes.
Okay, so there is a second, and I guess discussion can continue, but I'm having trouble understanding what the point of this is. Martha?
Well, the point is, as people are making calculations in their head about fund balance, I think that we can be comfortable and should recognize the comfort level that there is that these revenues are going to replenish our fund balance, and therefore we don't have to push off OTRs to the recovery fund, that there will be plenty for both. I really am quite confident that that's true. So this is a more accurate statement and not just wishful thinking.
Okay. Does anybody else have anything they want to say about this? All right, seeing no one, let's vote on the amendment.
Can you clarify what we're actually voting on? What the words are or whatever?
I have the $1 million from the increased sales tax and unallocated revenue to $40,609.24.
Okay, Kathy?
Black?
No.
Amanda Champion?
No.
Henry Grandison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
No.
Dan Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
No.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne?
She's not here. She's at the rally.
Event. Yep, at the rally.
Dave McKenna?
No.
Glenn Morey?
No.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Show?
Yes.
Mike Ziegler?
No.
Deborah Dawson?
No.
We have 5 ayes, 8 noes.
Okay, so that fails. Does anybody else have anything they want to say about the main motion?
Yes.
Henry?
Yes, I'd like to. I think one of the problems here is that this is the second thing that we're dealing with. I think that we should deal with it at the end. So I move to table this motion.
Okay.
I'll second that.
All right. So Dave McKenna seconds that. Is there any discussion?
I thought there was no discussion on a motion to table.
Clarification to the end of all the other budget motions. Is that the idea?
I don't think you have to tell a time either.
Well, to the end of what?
Yeah, if it's the end of eternity, Henry.
To the end of when we vote. To the end of when we vote in the budget.
Thank you.
To the end of when we vote in the budget.
Okay, Mike.
I think if it's a motion to table, then it needs a motion to bring it back from the table. The other way of doing it is a motion to postpone until, for example, the end of the discussion about the OTRs.
Thank you for that. Henry, did you want to leave your motion as a motion to table, or would you like to change it to a motion to postpone?
I guess a motion to postpone.
Is that friendly to you, Dave?
Yes.
Okay, voting on the motion to postpone. Kathy?
Shauna Black?
No.
Amanda Champion?
No.
Henry Grandison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
No.
Ann Corman?
No.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslie McKenna? Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
No.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Show?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
No.
Deborah Dawson?
No.
Six ayes, seven noes. Motion fails.
Okay, that fails, and now we return to the main motion. Are we ready to vote? Dan, do you
and Corman.
Hang on a second, we're checking the vote.
Dave, Martha, Leslie.
That's the last big picture.
Who?
And
okay, instant replay is finished.
Takes eight votes. Oh,
yeah.
I'm sorry. We're down 13 members, seven
yeah.
votes.
Now. Okay, so now we're voting on the main motion.
Repeat it, please.
The main motion is to take $1 million in fund balance to offset the OTRs in the county administrator's recommended budget and the target OTRs on this list, and thereby reduce the impact on the levy. Yep.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Henry Grandison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
No.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
No.
Leslie Show?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
11 ayes, 2 noes.
Okay, then. Daniel, you want to show us what that looks like on our handy-dandy budget spreadsheet?
Got it. One sec. There you go. The levy versus the prior year would now be 0.79%. The tax rate would drop from $6.21 per $1,000 of tax incidence to $6.15. That would represent $1,260 for taxes on the median price homes. And the change in the tax bill for the median price home owner would be $17.92.
All right. Thank you very much, Daniel. Okay, everybody, let's move on. The next star was filed South and Leslie Schill and Mike Lane, and it is to fund the county's share of the sponsor county's local match for SUNY infrastructure grants to finance capital improvements and deferred maintenance. The funding required from us would be $310,000 in 2022, and $155,000 in 2023. And if Mike or Leslie would like to move that, I'd appreciate it. I see Mike move it, Leslie second. I think most of you are familiar with the impetus for this particular OTR. We've had several meetings with Bill Talbot and the folks at 3. So I guess basically at this point, I would just note that, you know, the TC3 campus is our property. shared with Cortland County, and we are responsible for maintaining it. So I view this as part of our county operations. I would certainly be willing to hear if anybody has any questions or concerns. Mike.
Can I speak to it in favor?
Sure.
I think this is a good thing. Remember, TC3 doesn't have an account for its capital needs. There are things that have to go forward. They're going to get a grant to help them. But we have laboratories, for example, teaching laboratories that are 20 years old up there with that aren't the kinds of things that we want our students using. Corwin is on board with this, I believe. Which is a good thing. We've been talking about having an oversight committee of the two legislatures that would be similar to ones that we had for a capital improvement projects years ago. And I just think they've done a good job in looking at the various things that need to be done. Some of them, everything from erosion control to, as I said, classroom upgrades are in things that they'd like to move ahead, but they don't have any money at this point, and it's time once again, as we have in the past, to look at their capital needs and become a team player. And I want to point out one last thing, and that is what the two counties come forward for these capital projects, the state will match 50%.
Okay, anything else? Rich.
I'm going to support the OTR, but at the same time, I just want to be clear that I don't think that TC3 should have to wait and try to get money from the recovery fund. I think this is the appropriate mechanism that we deal with it within our budget.
I agree. I don't think anyone's suggesting that we not do it within the budget because it's county operations, basically. But, okay. Leslie.
And just to add, and I'm glad that Mike Lane mentioned the 50% match because that's not insignificant, but this is also time constrained. And so TC3 needs our commitment before the end of November in order to get that match. So it's kind of critical that this moves forward now.
Okay. Thanks for pointing that out, Leslie. Brittany, you got somebody?
Mike Sigler.
Mike?
My question was on the 50% match. So Cortland will be voting on, what's the total here, $310,000?
No, our match, the 50% match is the sponsor counties together have to commit to a 50% match. And our share of the 50% is 60, well, I can't remember offhand, is it 64 or something? It's about two-thirds, Mike, and that's okay. Based on the ratio of enrollees from Tompkins County versus enrollees from Cortland.
Okay, so our 310, and then they're kicking in whatever the other percentage is that they've
right.
Okay, I got you.
Okay, Brittany, you've got somebody, and then Martha has a question.
Henry?
Yes, you mentioned that Cortland County was looking about doing some in-value stuff. How would that be measured by the SUNY?
Well, I mean, that's a question really for Bill Talbot to figure out. But he has checked with SUNY, and SUNY has indicated that in-kind contributions do qualify. Mm-hmm. And one thing I will remind everyone is that we're putting this in an account line in the county that's dedicated to TC3. We need to do that in order to satisfy SUNY that we are firmly committed to making our share of the match. But the money won't be released until TC3 has its grant and starts its work, and Cortland County has committed to its share as well.
Did you also check with AREL whether we could do also in-kind contributions?
No, I didn't.
Mike?
Because it just seemed like we could also do the same thing as Cortland and save us some actual outlay of cash.
God.
I would think that the kind of in-kind things might be in our highway departments in the two counties, for example, work on the parking lots or the erosion issue with their pond, for example.
Oh, Leslie?
Yes, it looks like the opportunity for in-kind contribution would be largely for pavement maintenance.
Right.
There was a strong need for engineering analysis and a study to be done, for which I believe they want to bring on a consultant, and this was around multiple stormwater control concerns, some of which were large. And then there are also the academic fit out and refurbishment, renovation of some spaces. And I have a feeling that what we're going to need here are different kinds of expertise to bring in order to accomplish those goals.
And I will say that Bill and the TC3 folks have been extremely proactive about looking for grants everywhere they can find them.
Have they located any grants?
I'm sorry?
Have they located any grants?
Yeah, they have one. I'm trying to remember what that one was for. It was for classrooms or a laboratory or something. Yeah, they have grants. But the most urgent need right now appears to be the parking lots and the paving problems. And the drainage. I guess one of their parking lots is so bad that water bubbles up from underneath it. And so that makes up the bulk of the 1.5 million total that they're trying to amass. Leslie. Leslie, by the way, for anyone who's watching, has worked directly with the she put the Cornell maintenance guy in touch with the TC3 maintenance guy, and she's been working with Bill Talbot. So she's the expert on this.
Thanks. I'm just the liaison. But I just want to say I hope that this body, looking forward in the future, thinks about does a little bit of analysis, thinks about what would be healthy for this government to fund, but thinking about a reserve fund for attending to planned and preventative maintenance and maintenance of the assets on the TC3 campus in conjunction with Cortland County, our partners. So longer term, bigger vision, but thinking about that so that TC3 has the means when something needs to be attended to rather than asking in an emergent way or potentially using the wrong funds, which was a concern earlier, allocating operations for capital and things like this. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for that, Leslie. I think that Bill Talbot has been an outstanding asset for the college. You know, this is the first time in my relatively short tenure on this body that I've seen TC3 come to us well in advance and try to have us work with them from the beginning on a plan like this. So any other questions? Martha?
Yeah, we heard from a couple of federal folks today at Tiger, from the Cornell office and also from Senator Gillibrand's office. And there was conversation about the infrastructure bill and the Build Back Better bill, both, and then news today about, you know, seeming a better chance that things will actually get passed by the end of October. So the question is, and I know Cornell is looking for certain funding streams through the federal fund, the federal bills. If there is, I want to support this, but I would also encourage TC3, and I don't know how to do that exactly, except maybe to say I would support this as up to $310,000. If TC3 is eligible for federal grant funding for this kind of maintenance, you know, upgrades and maintenance for their facilities, I hope they will pursue federal opportunities and sort of bring the local share down as far as possible. So maybe Mike, being our liaison, has an answer to that.
Well, I will say that in their presentations, they have pointed out that they have tens of millions of dollars worth of
improvements in deferred maintenance that they need to attend to. This is just the most urgent piece of it. And I think that if there's money in that infrastructure program that would be available to them, number one, they're watching. And number two, they need it for other things. What's going on? Somebody's what? Who is it? Who's trying to talk?
That was Mike Sigler, his background noise.
Brittany muted him.
Oh, did Mike Lane have an answer to that?
He had his hand up, yeah.
I wouldn't want to tinker with the figure because of exactly what Leslie said. We have to commit to this in order now.
So they can apply
they can get
by December.
The state funding approved by this year.
Thank you, Mike.
Okay, anything else? We ready to vote?
Okay, Kathy?
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
No.
Henry Granison?
No.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Schill?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
12 ayes, 1 no.
Okay, thank you, everyone. And now the next one, you will recall that several of us visited with the TC3 folks, Deb Mollenhoff and Bill Talbot, about their workforce and career development pilot program. It's a 3-year program. And we voted through a resolution earlier this year for the first year of that. This is for the second and third years, $220,500 in 2022 and $126,000 in 2023. And if someone would move that for me, I'd very much appreciate it. Shauna moves. Do I have a second? Mike Lane. This is another one that many of us are familiar with from our earlier meetings with the college staff and from our consideration of the resolution for the first year's payment. Does anybody have any questions about this one? Seeing none, are we ready to vote? Okay, Kathy.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Schill?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
All right. Okay. Next one is a number filed by legislators Robertson, Granison, Black, Schill, John, and Corman, a multi-year OTR to cover development of the sunflower houses, i.e. the capital improvements needed to bring the houses up to INHS standards. I know there was some question about the amount of the funding, Martha, that you submitted earlier, and I'm going to let you address that. And I know Johanna is also here if we have any questions for the INHS folks. So can I get that moved, please? Martha moves, Leslie seconds. Discussion.
Go ahead, Martha. Thank you. The description is now, and we only have a little box for the description, so we couldn't go into the whole thing, but Dan has the results kind of basically the correct. So this is 3-year funding, but the $199,656 is only for the first year. The second and third years would be $104,472. INHS would only get the capital funding in the first year because they've spent $936,976 to bring the houses up to standard. So that's clearly development of affordable housing, capital improvement. So that's the one-time expense. The OAR and URO expenses are for programming for housing manager, et cetera. And if I'm happy to describe the program more fully. There was a healthy presentation at the Public Safety Committee and also at the HED Committee of what this program would be. Very, very short for the public. Sunflower houses are two homes that INHS has purchased and developed for with four apartment units, three bedrooms each. And these would be one of the units would be for women, the other three for men. These would be for people returning from jail or prison to be have safe, affordable housing. Together with the program manager, the housing manager from who would be an OAR employee, together with programming from URO. So this would be really wraparound services, resumes, workforce, life skills, all sorts of supports so that people are really able to actually succeed. The idea is that approximately 20 people a year would be helped because this is transitional housing. They wouldn't stay forever. They wouldn't stay for a whole year. So the three-year pilot program to sort of prove the concept. So those are the high points. All right. Johanna's nodding. I think I got it.
Okay. Well, if Johanna approves, then we know you got it right. Does anybody else have anything they want to say to address this particular OTR? Dan.
Thank you. This is going to be the beginning of my voting no, not based on the merits of the proposals, but based on the idea that I believe this should come out of the recovery fund. I believe that we set aside a large amount of money, $7 million, to pay for community initiatives, and that's what this is. This is also the moment I'm going to address what Leslie brought up about the seeming contradiction in the rosy outlook about the future of the finances of the county. And I could say it pretty easily. The amount we're proposing for lower taxes is $1.5 million. And the amount we are proposing to give the community is $7 million. So that's why they're very different. If they were the same amount of money, I would agree that there was a contradiction. We have set aside a lot of money for this purpose, and that's what I would like to see that money used for, and that's why I'll be voting no. Thanks.
Okay, anyone else? I've got Amanda and then Annie, and you guys can duke it out for who's going to go first.
Okay, I just want to clarify that this is additional funding for something we're already funding. What it says, where did it just say?
Yeah, there's $50,000 in Lisa's budget for right. Some of the services to the residents.
So we are requested and has went through the Human Services Coalition
right.
Review process for $50,000 for a housing case manager. That was before this was in the works. This additional 12 people supervision, Deputy Diedrich has said would require sort of higher level
right.
skills. So they need to increase the salary a little bit. That's $10,000 out of the OAR proposal.
Okay, right. So just clarifying that we are already. Like they did go through the process and some of that is already in the budget and this is
right.
additional.
Yes.
I have this question this year that has come up for some of us about where the funding, the ARP funding and the community recovery funding and the fund balance. And I've really been struggling with that because I do see a fairness issue, personally, with, the organizations that already know how our budget process works, they've already gone through the Human Services Coalition process, some of them. I tend to agree with Dan that, you know, we did set aside this money, and we have a plan in place. We're starting to work on how it's all going to come together. It's not going to happen overnight. So we'll wait to see at the very last moment how I vote. But I do believe that, you know, all of these OTRs are lovely and wonderful. And, you know, I wish that we could fund everything that everybody wants. And that's hard, that we can't always get what we want. But, all right, I'll stop there. Thanks.
Like a Stone song, Amanda. Okay, so I've got Annie, and then Shauna, and then Martha, and then Mike Lane.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I know there's been a lot of discussion the last couple of days regarding whether these amendments that are for the community, whether people are going to vote no based on the principle of they can apply for the community recovery funds. So I'm going to state again, which has been already stated maybe in different words, that we have an unknown application eligibility process. So we don't even know if these same organizations, first off, what the purpose that they're asking for this money and the time frame, whether they're even eligible to apply. And on top of that, we don't know, even if they were eligible, whether they would get it. So this is not just to say, just shift them all over, you know, vote today, but yes, we'll shift them all over and it'll come out of that money, which I'm not sure I would agree with. But what we're saying, what some people are saying, is that there's this other pot of money. Well, we've known there's this other pot of money for many months. And so this, to come up at the last minute, if we had more time, if we brought this up earlier and said, okay, we're going to have a different OTR process, I would be more open to talking about it, to letting our organizations know. But this is, to me, this is coming in last minute, and it's not fair to the other, to me as a legislator. I don't feel that it's fair. I don't feel it's fair to our process. I don't feel that it's fair to the community, just to say we're going to have a different OTR process at the last second on principle. So I would just at least like people to reconsider that this is not our OTR process. We can't just say we're going to scrap it this year because we have these other funds. And again, we're saying at the last minute, so I don't think it's fair. Thank you.
Okay, I have Martha, and then Mike, and then Brittany has, oh, Shauna, sorry, and then Brittany has somebody.
Mike Sigler,
yeah. Go ahead, Shauna.
Okay. I just wanted to, I wanted to ask Johanna a question in regards to if we were to move this project to a later time and it were to receive funds, let's just say in February or March, would this project still be able to take place?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me here. I have spoken with our partners at OAR and URO. The units have been sitting vacant since we got our COC in late May. We are looking to actually have them first become occupied this December 1st. We talked about it and we felt like it made the most sense to try and get people housed and in place before the holidays.
Could you, your mic went off or something. Say
Johanna,
that again.
Why don't you just take a seat and, you know,
be a legislator for a day?
Yeah, sit at the
table.
Sit at the big kids' table.
Thank you. Well, so our plan is actually to have them become first occupied on December 1st of this year. At this point, we're just finalizing the lease and seeing how this is going to work, because this is not our usual, for INHS, this is not our usual process. It's not a typical commercial lease like we would have with another nonprofit. It's actually a commercial lease but mixed in with residents, and so there's been a lot more back and forth. And frankly, until probably early September, the three of our organizations weren't really sure if this was going to work. It wasn't until we finally all got our schedules coordinated, toured the space, INHS got a better understanding about how the voucher process would work and how the rents would be collected or the payments be structured. And so this really, it took shape. It's now taking shape very quickly. And if you recall, when I came before you at the HED committee and talked about this as part of, you know, everything that INHS is doing over the last year and what we've got on our plate going forward, this was really, I could only give you two sentences about it because that's all I really knew at that time. We're very excited to be a part of this team, and we're grateful that our partners are experts at the piece that they're going to provide. So I'm looking forward to us beginning in December 1st.
Okay. I think the question that I really wanted to know, though, was if the funds were to come in February or March, would this project still occur?
For INHS, we can make that timeline work, but my partners cannot. Their portions of the support. INHS, we are so committed to this program that we will find a way to make it work. I'm curious, though. I would feel more comfortable if I had a better understanding about the timeline, about what a potential process would look like, or just if it's going to be a third party or internal review and those sorts of things.
Right. Okay. Thank you. I'm actually really torn on all of this as well, because I feel like we have a piggy bank with $7 million sitting around waiting to be spent on our nonprofits and our community organizations. And this would be a perfect project for that. I know that we've talked about moving these recovery funds as fast as possible. I think we will probably have the RFP information out, I'm guessing, next week. We'll open it up for 30 days. I mean, the process is slow because we're trying to figure it out. We're trying to basically recreate a process. But I think we also are trying to do process, and I think we're valuing that, and we're taking our time because that is a lot of money, and we want to make sure that it gets out to the right agencies. Rich brought up an interesting idea via email and earlier today in our meeting to actually use these rescue funds and to supplement those rescue funds as part of our budget to approve these OTRs. While I think that is a wonderful idea, the part that I have a really hard problem with is that it allows these agencies to skip in the line. And I realize that people that have come forth in the OTR process thought that it was one way, and some people are on a time frame for getting these projects done. So I'm struggling with this vote, is where I'm at.
Okay, I have Martha, then Mike Lane, then Mike Sigler, then Rich.
Could we see the gallery? I think I want to know if Deb Dietrich is here. That's Deb. I don't see Deb. All right. Well, I will then share what she told me. They have people ready to go. OAR has been recruiting people, looking for people who would be a good fit. There's time spent in vetting folks, making sure people are willing. It's not just, are you going to rent an apartment, you know, a room in an apartment, but are you going to profitably contribute? Are you going to sign on to sort of the various expectations of the program? So it takes a while to get people going, but they've been working on that. They've been getting furniture from Finger Lakes Reuse. Their shed is full of furniture, ready to move into the houses immediately. We have people right now on the streets or in our homeless shelter in the jungle because they don't have safe, affordable places to live. Because people with a record have faced all sorts of discrimination. I think it doesn't make any sense. If this is a good program, we should fund it now. If you feel compelled to take $199,000 off the $7 million, I think that's what Rich's proposal was, then fine, you know. But I think waiting until February or March, when five or six different legislators will be sitting here, then basically these three organizations are back to square one, when they will have been working on this for 9 months already, when we will have had people coming back from jail and prison for an extra 4 or 5 months without housing. These folks are shovel ready. This is ready to go. I think I really don't get the jump the line thing. It's almost backwards. It's like this is, instead what you're doing is putting a rope around the people who are ready to go and saying, oh, sorry, you can't go. You know, we invented this other thing that's kind of hypothetical and you'll have to wait and find out if you fit. This is a program that can help people starting in December 1st and get people into important programs that can save lives. I think we should go ahead with it now.
Thank you. Okay, Mike Lane.
So I've watched the debate go back and forth about, you know, these OTRs, you know, whether we should fund any of them or send them all over to the ARP application process, or excuse me, the recovery fund application process. I'm neither one way or the other. I said I'd like to look at these on a case-by-case basis. On this one, we're talking about something that we have needed for a long, long time. And we've made some steps toward it. And that is basically, quote unquote, halfway houses. We were talking about this years ago when we were beginning the first of many alternatives to incarceration programs. We did things like day reporting. We did things like the various drug courts, for example. But we've always known of the problem of people coming out of jail and ending up right back in jail after very little time. And it's recidivism that is the problem. This is like a halfway house. OAR did it for a few people previously, and I think that was good. If we can do it for more, I think that's important. I think if this had come to us in the middle of the year, we probably would have authorized the funding out of contingency for it because it's that important. So I think it's fine that it's coming to us now in budget, and I think that we ought to go ahead and approve this. If we're going to take it out of, take the money out of the recovery fund, I wouldn't have a problem with that. In my view, for example, we've already taken $1 million that should come out of the recovery fund because folks want to use that money for tax relief. And so as far as I'm concerned, that recovery fund ought to be down to $6 million at this point. So I'm going to vote for this, and that's my thinking.
Thanks, Mike. Now we'll hear from the other Mike.
There we go. I like having the other thing up, but this is okay too.
I just wanted to say this, and I'm going to be voting for this. I know some people think this should come out of the recovery money, but I don't really see it. I don't see the recovery money maybe the same way as other people do. I look at this problem as an every damn day problem. Like, this didn't happen because, you know, of COVID. This is literally something we've always had. And to say, oh, we're going to use that pot of money for this, yeah, well, we can. I mean, but frankly, I look at this problem, and we're trying to do OT, you know, alternatives. There's a lot riding on this alternative. Frankly, if INHS was not involved, I don't know if I would want to be involved. But since they are, that gives me a lot of hope. I think the other two, you know, the other two groups that are involved in this after INHS is no longer there, they know what's riding on this as well. So then the question becomes to me, you know, pick the person who's going to be living there wisely. That, you know, is a concern, obviously, because we need this to work. And I think if COVID never happened, we would still have this problem. This is not a problem caused by COVID. This is literally, you know, this is a societal issue. And do we keep people in jail, or do we try to put them in a halfway house and get them rehabilitated? I don't know if rehabilitation is even the right. How about instead of rehabilitation, not to commit more crime or to turn their life around or to put them back in society? And whoever they hire, who's going to be in charge of this show, they're going to have to interact with the neighbors constantly. I mean, I expect all that. So the hiring of that person, I hope is, I mean, I know it will be obviously treated very seriously, but that is going to be critical. And I don't actually see, I think it'll be successful. So I'm not even looking at it as a 3-year expenditure. I think this will be probably a forever expenditure. I hope it's going to be successful. Because if it's successful, that means we've gotten people out of jail. We've put them in a home. They've got life skills. They've gone and got a job. Then they've gone off and made a better life for themselves. I mean, isn't that kind of the goal of rehabilitation? So I don't really see the COVID money even really kind of playing into this. The money we got from the federal government, I see that as a very separate thing. So, yeah, I'll be voting for this. It's expensive, but it's frankly cheap, I think, compared to alternatives. I should probably rephrase that since this is an alternative. But anyway, you understand what I mean. Thanks.
Okay. I have Rich John and then Leslie Schell.
Henry?
And Henry. Yeah, I know. I've got Rich. I've got Leslie. I've got Shauna. I've got you, Henry. I've got Martha again. Rich, go ahead.
Thank you. I will support this OTR request. New York State has had roughly a 65% failure rate on people on parole, and housing is one of the critical determinants of whether somebody's going to be successful. 65% failure rate is terrible. We can do much better. The less is more fact I know passed, and that will have some impact, but getting these people in supportive housing is critically important. This is, I think, a really good example of where, yeah, we're going to spend money, but we're going to deliver value. This is what the community really needs in this regard. And to the point of, should we do it now? We can afford to do it now. The idea that because we have more money, we got federal money, we somehow have to rationalize not allocating it where it needs to go, I find very frustrating. And I hope we kind of think through that. This is a worthwhile project I support.
Okay, Leslie.
Thank you. I agree. This is a very important project. I'm impressed at the partnership that was able to be forged here. It's not easy to align three organizations with three missions, even if they coincide in places and budgets, as well as to develop housing and provide the services and to be ready to go. We'd like that ready to go before winter, so let's do keep in mind the seasonality here that was discussed. To the discussion that's broader, the
that this project falls within the context of, which is causing a lot of angst and kind of logistical or more of a formal problem for us for voting. You know, when the small committee worked on the recovery fund, we had the sense that some projects would be ready to go, right? We get applications, we get packets from folks all the time that have great ideas that have well-developed portfolios of work and experience. We also know that there are folks out there that haven't done that before, but they have great ideas, and we wanted to open it up for those folks too. That said, we imagined that the recovery fund originally might be multiple rounds to address exactly that issue. There could be great projects ready to go right now, and we need to fund them. We need to fund them now in the OTRs that are presented today for people who've been building these, building their case and working on their programs for months in order to bring it to our budget, because they know our budget process. Not everybody does. We'll have the recovery fund to follow on to that. And if everything is in good order with our finances, I hope that that too will be a very successful program in the future and can be a model for years after, when we're in good financial position, to again look out and give the community their head and let them tell us what's needed, right? Let them formulate the great ideas and the proposals for the future. But not everybody's going to be ready at the same time. Some things are ready to go now, and if they are, I think that we should fund them if we think that they are good proposals. And so I would ask folks to vote on their merits today on the OTRs in front of us. And when the next opportunity comes, wherever we are with the recovery fund total at that point, however we assume we're going to ledger the $7 million, let's fund the projects that come forward that are great at that time. And if the future legislature finds that they're in a good financial position in the years after, which I certainly hope is the case, and that the proposal that we're building now as a team here to create a new fund is successful, then I say in the future, open it back up again. That's for other legislators, other governments of the future to determine as we look at county government needs first. But I'm hopeful. And so I would say for those projects that have come forth, I don't think it's line jumping. I think that people just followed the order of operations that were the rules of the game in play for the last year and many years prior, and brought forth what are really critically important projects, some very time sensitive, all needs in this community, and we need to vote on them. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. That was that raised a very good point. Shauna.
Yeah, I would like to make a motion to fund this OTR out of recovery funds for the year 2022. The intent to fund out of recovery funds for 2023. And then, since this is a three-time OTR, to fund out of fund balance for 2024.
Is there a second for that? Mike Lane seconds. Anyone wish to speak to the motion? Amanda?
Yeah, sure. Fund this OTR out of recovery funds for 2022, fund out of recovery funds for 2023, fund out of fund balance for 2024.
Shauna, when you say recovery funds, do you mean the ARPA funds that we've already received? Or do you mean?
I'm talking rescue, recovery, the $7 million that we've set aside, just to confirm. Sorry. Yes, the recovery fund.
Okay. All right, and we had a second, Mike Lane. Martha.
The quick point I wanted to make in response to one of Mike Sigler's statements before, I'll just dump this into this first.
There's a motion on the floor.
I want to be efficient, you know.
But let's speak to the motion and let's follow the process.
All right, then I'll come back, ask to come back.
Yes.
That's how it works.
All right.
Does anybody have anything?
Yeah, I
just speak to the the amendment.
Yes.
Okay.
This is the first I've heard anybody talk about a recovery fund in 2023. This body voted against that. So that's number one. Number two, we've heard that people are going to be on the street in the winter without this housing if we don't vote for it now. There is no recovery fund 2022. It's a hypothetical. And frankly, the classification that we should fund county OTRs.
Point of information. I'm sorry, Martha. I understood her motion to be it would get funded now, but it would draw down from the $7
million. Yes, that's exactly right. Exactly.
Oh, I didn't. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So we approve it now.
Yeah.
It could go ahead and be funded,
yep.
But the trade-off is that that the $199,000 comes off the $7 million. Is that what you're saying?
That's right.
Not that they have to wait until March.
No.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Rich. All right.
Thank you, Nita.
Every once in a while, I'm helpful.
Every once in a while.
Yeah.
All right. I guess since, in fact, we're not voting on the second and third year funding anyway, I hear you. Okay.
I think it's important to note also for this OTR that the intent is there to have this come out of the recovery fund for 2023 as well. We don't know what future legislatures will do. However, we can put it out there. And then assuming that we're going to do this for 3 years, have it come out of fund balance.
Okay. I hope y'all do a second or a third recovery fund. But so, okay. Let me ask Dan if that's a thing. Does that work? Is there a way to make that work?
Sorry, are you speaking, this Dan, me?
Yes.
Yes,
okay,
Dan.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Other Dan. So if correct me if I'm wrong, but essentially it would be the same. We would just take a deduction off of the future recovery fund.
Right. So in other words,
when we get around to figuring out what we have available for the community plan, we will deduct out this $199,000.
There's no reason why not to do that.
Right.
Functionally, this stays the exact same way as it is as written, right?
In terms of this budget, it shows up as one-time funding. Okay, great.
It is exactly the same, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Brittany, do you have someone who wants to speak to the amendment?
Leslin.
Leslin.
Thank you. So I need some clarification. And first of all, thanks for changing what the amendment is, because I would not have been able to support it the way it was written previously. Now, it says, and I know it's about $137,000 of this. I don't remember how much it is, goes to capital improvements to the housing for INHS. So with the amendment, we are not looking to do the same thing in 2023 or 24 as Shauna proposed. This is just one time because I don't suppose that INHS is still doing capital improvements to these. They would already be done. They've already been done. So the future years will be a lesser amount that's going out.
That's what's in your table here. So this, for this first year, $199,656, includes URO and OAR, as well as INHS. The second and third years only require $104,472. For OER and URO, and it's split up.
Okay, I was missing the table, so thank you for sliding over, Dan.
Yeah, right, there you go. I know it's 35,000 each year for URO, and I can't do the rest of the math in my head.
69 something for OER each year.
Go. Right.
So then, okay, may I ask another follow-up here? So the $50,000, I'm trying to read the thing again, if I remember correctly what I read. that's already in the OTR County Administrator supported, does that come off of the 69 that OER is asking for?
No, that's in addition. The housing case manager is 60,000 altogether. 50 is already in the budget through the OTR and the Human Services Coalition.
That just confused me even more, Martha. If 60,000 is what's needed and 50 is in the budget, then why?
Well, there's only one, that's only one piece of it though, right?
Yes.
There's more that's needed.
Right. The OTR for Housing Case Manager was originally meant just for Endeavor House. And, it was put in before Sunflower Houses was a thing. So OER put it in for Endeavor. HSC approved it and Lisa approved it. And I
right. I understand all of that, but the explanation that came with this proposal said that $50,000 of what's needed for this proposal was already approved by the county administrator.
For year one.
Right.
But
Endeavor House didn't have anything to do with this.
But then in year two and year three, as I understand it, the cost of that administrator is included in this OER.
Thank you. Thank you. Got it.
Okay. All right. Amanda, you had a question about the amendment or not?
Wait, I had a question too.
No, I know you did, Henry, but is your question about the amendment or is it about
yes.
the main motion? Okay.
It's about the amendment.
I don't read mine.
Well, I raised my hand.
Okay. Which I can't
prove. Well, anyway, I basically, you know, trying to find common ground here. And so I'd like to make a motion to amend the amendment to, in fact, say that for the second and third years, it'll come out of the fund balance. Because, again, since we only put the recovery funds for 1 year, in years two and three, what's going to happen? And so if we guarantee that year one is recovery funds, in years two and three of the fund balance, then I can support it.
Does anybody want to second that?
Amendment.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, you can.
Not an EBC.
Not an EBC?
Because we're making an amendment to the for the full budget. So every amendment we make is first. I only have one more.
It's ingenious. Okay.
We have to vote on the amendment on the floor.
Yeah, and then we can consider Henry's amendment.
Right.
Well, I'm going to suggest something. Shauna, would you be willing to amend your amendment? Because you can do that, I think, as the moving party, to just deal with year one. Because year two and three of this OIR, I think, first of all, are going to have to be voted on again next year and the year after. And secondly, we don't know if this becomes part of Target, for example. Anything can happen in year two and three. And I think the main thing we're worried about right now is year one. Would you be willing to do that?
Yeah, I am happy to do that to move this forward with the idea that I do, in fact, hope that the legislators that will be here over the next 2 years will support a program. We should never put a program out there for 1 year because you cannot have results after 1 year. So for those of you that will be here next year and the next year, I hope you remember this day.
Okay. So the amendment on the floor is simply that the first year of this OTR will be charged against the community recovery plan when we actually know how much that's going to be. Does everyone understand that? All right, cool. Are we ready to vote on Shauna's amendment? And then I guess we'll have to consider Henry's amendment if he wants to make it. All right. Kathy?
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Henry Grandison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslie McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Schill?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes. Okay. So, Henry, where does that leave you with your proposed amendment?
I'd still like to propose it and see what happens.
Okay, so what is it again?
That years 2 and 3 of the funding comes from the comes from fund balance.
Okay, is there a second to that? Martha seconds that. All right, then. Does anybody want to speak to that amendment? Martha?
Yeah, that I think that will give a little bit more assurance to the agencies. You know, I love that we have entrepreneurial, creative, collaborative nonprofits. And, you know, I think this would be, you know, the appropriate way to support them and show some continuity, continuity of support.
Okay, so let me ask a question. I see you, Brittany. My experience with our our multi-year OTRs in the past has always been that we end up having to vote on the second and third years as part of those budget processes anyway. So not that I particularly object to the proposal that Henry's given us and that you've articulated, Martha, but I'm not sure how much assurance that necessarily gives, because a subsequent legislature can always change its mind. So I just, you know, I want that caveat to be clear to everyone. And not that I would want to change it. I really do understand how worthwhile this program is and how badly needed it is. Martha, you have your hand up again.
Yeah, I think it just, I think, Henry, the intention is that sort of to put this into the normal OTR process for the 2023 budget, if I understand correctly. And I think that's a smart thing to do.
Okay. Does anybody else have anything else they want to say about this? Leslie, and then Henry, is your hand up again?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So Leslie and then Henry.
I just want to know before we vote what the actual difference between the two is. I want to make sure I understand.
I think it's just designating where the money officially is going to be coming from. Henry?
Yes, that's my goal, is to make sure the money is not just going to be a 1 year and then sort of say, oh, well, we don't know where the money's coming from. We have to figure it out. That the money will be set where it's coming from, and that, again, it gives more assurances to the organizations that, again, that we at least have set up funding. So if the legislator wants to remove it, then they have to physically vote to remove it, not to just do nothing or something like that. Again, they have to physically vote to remove the funding from in future years.
Okay, Martha, you had your hand up?
Yeah, just quickly. Again, it's just $104,000 and change. We don't have a 2023 recovery fund.
Right, I understand.
Yeah, I mean, so we specifically voted against doing that, so I don't know how we would even make that commitment. Okay.
Okay.
You.
Amanda.
Well, I would just note that in my limited experience, the OTRs that are numerous years generally get baked into the county administrator's full budget.
Right.
So a subsequent legislature would have to decide this is something we want to take out and go through that process.
Right.
But actually, if it's recovery fund, not so, because there isn't a 2023 recovery
Henry's
fund.
Henry's proposing a fund balance.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Anybody else? Brittany, do you have somebody?
Leslin.
Okay. Leslin?
And Lisa.
I actually wish to say the opposite of what Amanda said, which is multi-year funding gets voted on every year. So I don't want to sit here and give people assurances that this is a done deal, because the next year's legislature might want to vote on it. Doesn't mean that it's in the budget. We can make that promise, but we vote on multi-year funding every year. I just want to make sure we're clear on that.
Yeah, I think we are. Anybody else?
Lisa?
Oh, Lisa, thank you.
Thank you. I was just going to say exactly what Leslin said, that the legislature, I believe, only votes on and only commits funding in one budget year at a time. So if you can state that you're making the intention for it to be multi-year funding, but the next year's legislature would have to affirmatively vote for that to come out of fund balance. The only way that it would be multi-year funding where you would have to take it out is if it were in the target.
Martha?
Not to belabor this, but if it's a multi-year funding with OT, you know, then it shows up that the administrator needs to consider. If it's funded under a recovery fund that doesn't exist, I don't even know how it would show up. So
the recovery fund that doesn't exist piece of this, Martha, is only, as we passed it, is only for the first year.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So that's
what, yeah.
All right. So are we ready to vote on Henry's amendment? Okay. Kathy.
Donna Black.
I hate being first. yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yeah.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslin McBean-Claiborne?
No.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Schill?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
And 13 ayes, 1 no.
Shauna, you trendsetter, you. Okay. So now we're back to the main motion, I think, which is that we're going to have a three-year OTR for this project. The first year of it is going to be charged against the community recovery plan when that plan is created, and the second and third year of it will come out of fund balance. Martha.
Just a little bit I wanted to say before. I think Mike Sigler said something about INHS will be out of this after the first year. I don't know that he...
Johanna left.
Okay.
She's out of the room.
Okay, I'll still say, I would say it if she were in front of the room. They're going to continue to manage the house, the physical house. OAR will have the lease with them. So they manage the house, OAR and URO manage the people.
They're the owners, and OAR and URO are the tenants. Okay.
They're not out of it.
All right, so are we ready to work?
Wait, point of order then? So why doesn't that show up in the funding? I was just literally looking at the lines in the funding.
Well, the funding, it doesn't really show up in the funding, Mike, because we're simply underwriting the costs of URO and OAR's management, and the rents come from, I don't know where,
the vouchers.
Yeah.
Okay. No, okay. I got it. Thanks.
Okay. Kathy.
Okay. Shauna Black.
Yes.
Amanda Champion. Henry Granison.
Yes.
Remember, I had my hand up. I was trying to ask a question and say something before the vote.
Okay.
Allowed in the rule.
You know what? Just go ahead. Go ahead with the vote. Don't worry about it. Just go ahead.
Is that
Rich Shen?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslin McBean-Claiborne?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Schill?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
Okay, Leslyn, do you want to say what you were going to say?
No, ma'am. The vote has already been taken and recorded, so never mind.
But if there's something that you want to add to the record, we're perfectly happy to hear it.
That's fine. I'm fine. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Can we do one more?
Five more.
We're going to stay here all night. Yeah. All right. So the next one is an OTR filed by legislators Corman, John, McKenna, and Robertson, multi-year OTR for Finger Lakes reuse, funding $130,000 each year for 3 years from 2022 through and including 2024. Would somebody like to move that? Leslie?
I would propose that we wait on this, because if there are several legislators needing additional information about if the timing, if this got moved to ARPA funds instead. Recovery funds. I'd rather have people here from Finger Lakes reuse if that's an issue for people.
Is that an issue?
Yes.
Are people prepared to, so that's an issue for Leslyn.
Diane Cohen here.
No, so that's the question I wanted.
Can we wait on this one, please?
If you have issues, yes, we can. So Annie, you just want to save that for later?
Yes. Thank you.
Cool. All right. So now we're down into the itty bitty weeny ones. Okay. We've got an OTR from legislators Dawson, McBean, Claiborne, and Black for $100,000 for a countywide compensation study. Shauna moves that. Can I get a second from someone? Dan Klein, second. Shauna, I'm going to let you speak to this one.
Okay. We have been talking about doing this almost all year, and I think it is time to back that up with some financial commitment from the county in order for us to move forward with the countywide compensation study. The one thing that I would ask with this and add to this is if we could actually allocate those funds as soon as possible so that we can put an RFP out in order to recruit firms to do this compensation study.
Mike Lane and then Martha.
I just don't understand. If we pass this as an OTR, then it's not going to become available until January.
Would it be better to
bring it as a contingent request to the full legislature?
We have done it before where we've released funds early. Why don't we ask
Lisa?
Lisa or Dan?
It depends upon when the study commences and the terms negotiated by the firm that is going to do the study. So if we have an RFP that is going to be released and then we select a firm, it's going to depend on that timing. And I would just need to connect with Ruby on that, whether that's going to fall in 2021 or 2022, the payment.
Martha.
I'm sympathetic to the idea of moving things up, you know, in before January in certain cases. However, our human resources department is
kind of busy,
and I think the absolute top priority should have been since April the search for a county administrator. So I wouldn't want to put anything in front of that or in the word, even at the same time, because I think that search really necessarily will take time from staff. And I think this one, you know, a month or two later is not going to be critical. I think it's really important that the county administrator search be priority and it's not get in the way. But I'm going to support this, but not to try to rush it.
Well, so I think if you want, if Sean is suggesting that it would be moved up, that would have to be an amendment to this. Like, that's not already baked in, right?
Right. You know what? So why don't I redo that and say that it not be moved up? Because that seems to add confusion. That way it'll happen January or whenever next year, and we don't have to worry about the accounting of this. It makes it cleaner. So I would like to keep this as the OTR that it's written as. And our staff will start it whenever they have time.
Okay. Did we actually have a second for that?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Terrific.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was going to say, if for some reason this becomes urgent, I suppose that we can always address it by a motion later through BCP. So anything else on this particular issue? Brittany, you've got someone with a hand?
Leslyn.
Hi, Leslyn.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say exactly what Shauna said, so I'll take my hand down.
Okay, great. Thank you. We ready to vote on this one? All right. Kathy.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Show?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
Okay. So next up.
Make one little comment.
Yes, you may.
And that is, I know they've been working on this all year, but it is actually something that we were working on as long ago as 2 years ago, but kind of got sidestepped with the pandemic issues.
Oh, that old pandemic excuse. All righty. So the next one is Legislator Johns. It's the Career Pathways OTR for $85,000. Do you want to move that, Rich?
Yes, I would move this OTR and happy to speak to it if I can get a second.
Okay, Martha seconds. Okay, Rich, go ahead.
The Career Pathways is a collaborative effort by a large number of community agencies to try to work together to address employment for the most marginalized in our community. Like the Sunflower House, it involves different agencies working together to try to put their expertise into a slot where it's needed. And what we found is that while there's been a lot of really goodwill and hard work, we haven't had a great level of success in getting people all the way through to gainful employment. And the idea of the Career Pathways is to try to do a supportive process to allow people to get, to overcome all the barriers to get from being unemployed or chronically underemployed to employment. And some of the organizations that have been involved are CCE, Reuse, the Union Apprenticeship Program, BOCES, which in fact next Monday is starting a heat pump installation training program, Historic Ithaca, OAR, URO, College Initiative Upstate, the Chamber of Commerce has participated as well as Tompkins Workforce. I think this is a really worthwhile and cost-efficient way to try to improve the pipeline for these people to get from unemployed to employed. Thank you.
Thanks, Rich. Shauna.
I would like to make a motion that this come out of the recovery fund.
I would consider that friendly.
You mean to be charged against it, the way
right.
Not to wait for it.
Nope.
That's same right. Idea.
Yeah. Okay. So these future amendments should be charged against and not.
That's come. Right.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Brittany has someone with a hand up.
Henry. Henry?
Yes. Rich, you talk about that employment is an issue, but the program has been going for, what, a year? I mean, what's been some of the major hurdles that that basically that, that...
Yes?
I don't believe the seconder said if it was friendly or not, and I do not find it friendly, so I think we need to have a vote.
Okay. All right. Does anybody want to speak to the amendment?
So all motion. Maybe a second to my motion, right?
Right.
Okay.
Okay, so we're going to discuss the Shauna's amendment.
Who seconded Shauna's amendment? I don't have
one. Mike Lane. Mike?
I think the amendment makes sense. This is what I talk about, looking at these as a case-by-case basis. This is a one-time request here for this money. It's about a lot of agencies that do a lot of good for people. This is what our recovery funds are ought to be used for. And I just think it makes a lot of sense from what, based on what Shauna is suggesting.
Amanda?
So I think Mike Sigler said something very interesting. Thank you, Mike. A while back when he was talking about the recovery fund and I guess we were talking about the sunflower houses, maybe. I can't even remember now. But I think the recovery fund is supposed to be for things that were a result of COVID. That's what all that money was for, was to make, you know, people whole again or fix problems that came up during COVID. I guess I don't understand if this is doing that. Does this directly affect a problem that came up from COVID? So that would be my question to Rich.
Okay. Yeah, I see you, Martha, but I want to hear what Rich and perhaps Leslie or Mike Sigler have to say.
Certainly the impacts of the pandemic have been felt unevenly. The Careers Pathways program would make sense even if we had no pandemic, but some of the most affected people are in this category that would be addressed by the career pathways, or are being addressed.
The most affected people from COVID is what you're saying.
That in terms of employment and being able to develop career pathways,
okay,
this category within our community has struggled probably more than any other.
Thank you.
Okay, is it Henry or Leslie?
Henry.
Yes, I thought also that the recovery fund is supposed to be used for innovative programming. How does this program innovate, basically, since it's already been funded last year?
Well, it continues it, but it is, I would categorize this as a highly innovative program in that we've had lots of really hard effort by individual agencies trying to address this issue. And at the same time, we see county employers saying, we can't find qualified people to work with us. And this is trying to address that specific issue in a very different direction. So I'd say it's innovative in that way, Henry.
Okay. Does that answer your question, Henry, or do you have more questions?
I don't have any more questions.
Okay, so I have Martha, I have Leslie, and if there's somebody else on there, Brittany, Leslin.
Leslin.
Okay. Yes.
nice quote, Mike.
Yeah, even a broken clock is right twice a day, Mike. Is my turn?
What?
I just wonder if we could go back to the gallery screen.
Yeah, maybe we could go back to the gallery screen for the purpose of these discussions so I'm not, you know, stumbling around in the dark. Okay, Martha.
Yeah, it's interesting now that people are saying, I thought the recovery fund was this, or I thought the recovery fund was that. I think it's a completely blank slate at this point. Everybody voted for it for whatever reasons, and I read Lisa's 12 or so pages sort of that say this whole process for how we're going to define what it is. So anyway, I think this is an innovative program. As I said, I'm okay. I don't like it, but I'm okay with charging it against the recovery fund, but I think we should fund it. And if people feel better by taking it off the top of the recovery fund, then fine. But I think this again is one of those pieces where we seem to have this trouble connecting the, you know, particular links from individual to job We have jobs that need people and people who need jobs.
This is financial need.
And this is trying to be very efficient about making those connections.
Yeah. Well, I don't think anybody questions the worthiness of these programs. I also think that intuitively a lot of us understand that addressing workforce inequities and housing, for example, are two things that would definitely be included in what we ultimately end up with as a CRP. I'd be gobsmacked if affordable housing wasn't in there. And you would come in and beat us all on the head with a stick. So, you know, anyhow, okay. So I've got Leslie and
Leslin and Henry.
And Leslin and Henry, yeah.
Thank you. So, Deborah, you asked for folks that were on the committee, at least our initial thinking around that, recognizing that the recovery fund is evolving even now and will continue to do so, and that would be healthy. But our initial thinking was that this could be a multi-pronged approach to dealing with local community needs. And so some of those were about immediate acute needs coming out of COVID. But not just that, right? So it was also about building long-term capacity in the community around sustainability, resiliency, leveraging, where are there opportunities to leverage public-private funding, federal funding especially, supporting nonprofits, but also supporting businesses, looking at long-term critical needs and identified gaps, some of which were exacerbated during COVID. So childcare, for example, long-term standing need, deficit position for this county as far as child care slots. And that was, it just got harder during COVID and people are still struggling to find child care. So those are some of the examples. And to Henry's point, yes, transformative. What can we actually seed here with this fund that will help grow even more, right? And then just lastly, because we are the county government, does it align with our county comprehensive plan and the big picture vision and initiatives that comprehensive plan lays out? So it wants to be a lot of things, right? But it also offers a broad umbrella for us to define the path forward and what we think is critical priority projects.
Thanks for that, Leslie. Okay, so now I have Henry and Leslin, or Leslin and Henry, I don't care.
I removed my hand because I don't have anything more profound to say, and you would just need to stop talking.
Okay. Does this funding go to CCE to run the program?
It would pay some of the administrative costs. The collaborative has been seeking grant funding, and it looks like they've obtained some grant funding from the Park Foundation. And there's another very large grant that is on the line. They're also working with the city of Ithaca on their electrification project. So they're looking for funding from different directions. This money would pay $35,000 towards it for the administrative function, and then provide $10,000 stipends to five of the partners to place employment navigators there, which are the support personnel that work with the participants.
But in terms of controlling their finances, it would be CCE that would control their finances.
As written, yes.
What do you mean as written?
Yes. Yes. Okay. That's what it says in the OTR.
Okay.
If you have another place you propose the money should be placed, I don't know.
No, I'm just asking where the money's going. Thanks.
Okay. Where are we?
I have an amendment.
Okay.
Your pathway, 85,000.
Okay, so this is Shauna's amendment that would have this charged against the community recovery plan. So let's vote on that, people.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
No.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
No.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslin McBean-Claiborne?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Sorry. Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Dr. Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Shook?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
With 12 ayes, 2 noes.
Okay. Moving on to a consultant study of...
That was just on the amendment.
I'm sorry.
Did we get a break?
Let's finish this. We got a vote on the...
Yeah, we've got a vote. Sorry.
Right, yeah. But it's been almost 3 hours.
I have no idea how much I want this to be over. Okay. All right. So are we ready to vote on the main OTR? All right. Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion? Henry Granison?
No.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Abe McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Show?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
13 ayes, 1 no.
Okay, now...
Point of information.
Okay.
How long did you expect to go tonight?
Well, we were supposed to go till 7:30. I think that we can address at least the consultant study of countywide code enforcement, and then I will take your temperature on how much longer you might want to go tonight. Reminding everyone that we will still have to meet again tomorrow because Annie has pulled the member files on the OTR for Finger Lakes reuse. So even if we got through everything tonight, we'd still have to come back. Okay. Martha, you hear your hand up?
Yeah, I'd like to make a motion that's a little different from what you're about to suggest.
All right.
Let me try it. I would like to move the consultant study OTR plus the historian plus the advisory board priorities plus the poet laureate. What do we think? But get them all in there.
Yes, I think that's a great idea, Martha. Can you repeat that for the sake
second.
Of
second?
Say what?
I was seconding it.
Oh, okay. So okay. What's seconding?
The motion
What's the motion?
Okay, the motion is. The $75,000 one time for the consultant study, in addition to the $10,000 target for the historian. These are at the bottom now. And the $26,950 for advisory board priorities plus the poet laureate at $2,000. So that's one motion, all four.
Plus Finger Lakes for you. No.
Nice try, Annie.
Glad you pulled it.
Okay, so that motion has been made and seconded. And Mike, did you have something?
I want to talk about it.
The countywide.
I guess I'm not totally convinced yet that we need to go ahead with the consultant study for the countywide code enforcement. I don't have a good feeling of what the municipalities want here. I question whether they will want a countywide code enforcement, having gone through it with the state being the code enforcer when they first passed the things many years ago, the building codes many years ago. And so I'm not saying I would be opposed to it if that's what they want, but I don't want us to step into land use issues with the city and the towns and the villages, unless they're asking us to do that.
Well, I think wouldn't that be part of what the study would tell us? Martha.
Yeah, the whole idea is to study it without prejudice, without knowing what the outcome would be, and a big part of the study would be in fact to interview municipal officials, the elected officials, the planning. You know, the current code officers, et cetera. So the Tioga County study that I sent around, that HED discussed last meeting, did all that. And it's a really elegant study, sort of reviewing different options, sort of a menu of options that counties could pursue. And I think there are eight or more counties that already do have code enforcement at county level. But there are a lot of different sort of different flavors for how you would solve this problem. And I'm not proposing, and I'll just say the start came from the Lansing code officer, C.J. Randall, who proposed this, who raised this at, I think it was the January or February planning advisory board meeting. Jay Franklin jumped on. That's why I'm glad Jay was, the gallery went away. Jay was here on the meeting. He saw a lot of different, he came to HED and saw a lot of different benefits to it. So based on the HED conversation, I got this topic added to the TCOG agenda for October 28th. Same day, we're going to talk about it again at HED because CJ couldn't come to the last meeting. So, Mike, I'm not suggesting this as checking a box and then we're going to do it because I'm not even sure what it is. That's the point, is to study what the options are and do all the relevant interviews and see what fits best for Tompkins County.
Okay, I know that Shauna has a question. Dan has a question. Does Henry have a question? But before
nope.
that, I'd like
oh,
to ask...
Nope, he took his hand down.
Oh, okay. Before I get to you all, if you'll permit me to ask a question of my own, have you spoken with Katie and company about their having the capacity to oversee this next year?
The study?
Yeah.
You know, it got put into DPS. I don't know that it has to be there. I think, Jay is interested in the idea. Maybe
okay.
it would feel better there. So it got put into DPS on the list, and I didn't go back and forth to check on whether that was the right idea. But so.
I would expect it would be a joint project. My only concern about this, I mean, I think it's something that's sorely needed, but my only concern about this is that they're still down one, and I know that they've got a pretty full plate. So, yeah.
Right, but the Tioga study is a great model. This might be a lot less labor intensive than, say, the broadband study. So.
Okay. All right. Thank you. So I've got Shauna and Dan and
Lisa.
All right. Well, let's hear from Lisa first.
Thank you. And I just wanted to say, I believe Katie is on tonight and Jay is or was. This was discussed with both of them. As Martha said, and I believe Deborah, you mentioned too, it would be best as a joint venture. But Katie has expressed that, DPS is, has had a lot of experience leading studies and writing RFPs for such, so they could put that experience to use. And Jay and his department have an interest in certainly participating in this and being very involved. So it would be a joint venture between the two, and both have been involved in this discussion as it's evolved.
And they're agreeable?
Yes.
Okay. All right, so now I've got Shauna and then Dan, and do I have somebody else, Brittany?
Leslin.
Okay, Shauna, Dan, Leslin.
That was my question. I'm set, thank you.
Dan?
Not sure how to put this between a question and a comment. It's the same subject. I feel resentful that just a week ago, 9 legislators voted against a broadband study, partly because it was said that the Department of Planning couldn't handle that, their workload was full. That was something we agreed to last year, and so we wiped that off their work plan, and now we're putting something else in the work plan, and I don't feel good about that. That's my comment.
Okay, Leslie.
Deborah, my question was answered to by Lisa about the planning being able to take this on. So I'm fine.
Okay.
And thank you, Dan.
Mike?
I'd like to move to separate the proposal for the joint study or for the consultant for the study of this from the other two.
Thanks. I'll second it.
The other three. I put them together with three others.
Yeah. Okay. So. All right, so let's vote on this motion to separate this from the others.
And I have Katie has her hand up.
Katie?
Yeah, I'd just like to speak. I would just like to say that I think the magnitude of this study is not going to be a huge lift for our department, and Jay has expressed willingness to add his staff resources to this as well. So that's one reason I found time in our work program to be able to do this.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So let's vote on Mike's proposed amendment.
Dan, can you stop sharing your screen, please?
Daniel Nolan? Okay. All right, Kathy. We're voting on the amendment.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
No.
Rich John?
No.
This is just to separate, right?
Yeah, this is just to separate.
Separate it from the other three.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
No.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslie McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Did it again. Sorry about that. Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Schill?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Okay.
11 ayes, 3 noes. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry, Kathy. So what's your pleasure, people? Do we want to do the three itty-bitty ones and come back to this? Let's do the itty-bitties, and then we'll come back to code enforcement. Does anybody have anything to say about the itty-bitties? Mike?
I just want everyone to know the change in structure for the county historian here. Currently, the county historian stipend is paid by STPB's room tax. Why that is, I'm not sure. Apparently, it was changed out of the general budget years ago. Talked with Lisa a little bit about this, and we thought the best way to get this up to where it ought to be in with the regular general fund funds. And so this changes it, so it will now be from the as a target amount of $10,000 from the general fund, but the $7,500 will not come from the room tax.
Oh, goody. So there's more room tax for other things.
I guess you could look at it that way.
Well, see, every cloud has a silver lining. Okay. So voting on is increasing the county historian stipend from $7,500 to $10,000 a year and putting that in target, dedicating $2,695 one time to advisory board priorities, and creating a target stipend of $2,000 a year for the poet laureate. Does anybody have anything they want to say? Leslie?
I just want to move the new.
Oh, okay. All right. And can I get a second, please? Okay, Amanda.
What was her motion?
Her motion was on these three, to vote on these three.
They didn't need a motion.
There are any.
Yeah, okay, we didn't need a motion, but that's cool. Mike?
Just a comment that I would hope that, with respect to the poet laureate stipend, that there be some kind of a proposal, perhaps out of GO, as to what kinds of things we would expect the poet laureate to be doing.
I get that's fair, I guess. So, anything else? All right, are we ready
yes.
to vote on?
I would also yeah. like to say that the poet laureate should have some job duties or whatever in connection with the stipend.
Okay.
May I?
I think that's something we can take up at GO.
May I, Deborah?
Yes.
I would like to say that when we created the poet laureate position, that it already came with what we expect the person to be doing. And when, and Amanda, correct me if I'm wrong, I've been sitting on this selection committee for years and part of the, you know, selection of a poet laureate when it goes out, it says what are those things that need to be happening. We can certainly share that with you all, because there's already stuff that's been written when this was developed.
Well, that's good to know. Thank you for that, Leslie. Amanda?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can't really say, like, okay, you must pen 3 poems this year, and you must attend 5 events and have 4 workshops. I mean, it doesn't really work like that. People, organizations invite the poet to give a reading, or they decide they're going to hold workshops at the library or at the jail, and they work out, you know, they spend hours working with folks at the jail to try to figure out how to make a program work. And so it's not something where somebody keeps track of their hours. They are creative people who make art and are trying to put art into the community. And I think trying to put it into a box and say they must do these things kind of defeats the purpose. So we can talk about it for another 25 minutes if you want, because that's what we did 2 years ago.
Sure.
But, you know, it's art. So you either support art or you don't.
Well, it's good to know that we already have a job description.
And so we'll share that with you all. Thank you, Amanda.
Okay, thanks. Martha?
I didn't remember that there's a job description, but I hope it includes come talk to the legislature once in a while, because we kind of never see the person. So,
well, I disagree. We've invited her numerous times over the past couple of years.
Maybe once a year, twice a year. Okay, thank you.
Okay, I'm sorry, just one little thing. Amanda, I am happy to write up the job description if we want to increase the salary to $10,000.
Okay, so, let's do it.
All right, let's get it under control here. Yeah, I think we're ready to vote, I think.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Inda Champion?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslie McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Schill?
Yep.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
Okay, folks, let's see if we can get through this county code enforcement study, and then we'll adjourn until tomorrow night. Okay, back to, do we need a motion on this, or are we good? Okay, so we don't need a motion. Martha?
Okay, yeah, just this is, I think this is a good government idea. Just the same way that we have benefited enormously from decades of having countywide assessment. I think that's why one of the reasons Jay is a fan. Lisa has talked about this could be a good candidate for the following year's shared services plan, assuming, you know, depending upon the results of the study and what the legislature decides to do with those results. So I'm glad that I really hope this moves forward.
Okay, Leslie, and then Henry.
I just want to share my experience working on planning projects across the county and collaborating with code enforcement officials pretty much in every municipality at this point over the years. I have great respect for the work they do. I will say different municipalities have different levels of access to staffing, full-time staff or part-time staff, to complete much needed code reviews so that, you know, folks can get their home improved, or that you can put a driveway in some cases, or a fence. And that what we've seen over time is that it's been harder and harder to find new code officials, and that our code officials, much like our county government and the rest of our population, is aging. And our code is getting more complicated, whether it be building code, whether it be a new Ithaca green building code, energy add-on supplement to our energy code in New York State, or if it's fire code has also become recently more complex. And so looking at how we can best serve our public by thinking about if there's an opportunity for shared resource or creating specialties, I think would be helpful. We've certainly seen challenges in the downtown area in the city of Ithaca, as well as now the growing town of Ithaca. When big projects come, having enough code enforcement officials on hand to review projects. And so to keep projects moving and to not cause delays in needed housing development or otherwise. So I'm supportive of studying and figuring out what is the best approach. That said, all the municipalities are definitely going to have to weigh in. It's, you know, this is a local home rule, and we need to figure out where land use can coincide with building code and where that fits best in the municipalities and in the county. So thanks.
Thank you. I think it's fair to say, too, that we're going to get different reactions from different municipalities, because I know in my village, you know, a lot of times when we start talking about changing the code, the question becomes, who's going to enforce this? I mean, we've got to staff people. It's very difficult. And then you look at a larger town that actually has a staff, their reaction is going to be very different. So the study will be useful to tell us that as well. Okay, I have Henry and then Mike Sigler.
Yes, I'd like to ask Jay Franklin to address an issue that I talked to him about before, about since what I've heard is that code officials are overworked. They're basically, whether this means that we have to hire more code officials, or what's the analysis of whether it'd save us money or whatever, in terms of comparing the assessors who combine versus the code enforcers who would combine.
Well, I think hopefully the study will tell us that. But I think by combining and having a bigger office, we are able to bring along entry-level positions, since you can't find a seasoned code officer, much like we just brought on two assistant real property appraisers in my office with really no background. We're able to bring them in and bring them training. But definitely with the amount of new building codes that code officers have to learn, I don't want to say that they're behind, but I do talk to contractors who know they have to build in extra days that are wasted on the job as they're waiting for the code officer to come check their construction projects at various stages. So there's that they know that they need to build in an extra week on this 3-month job. That also costs those property owners extra money when the code officer's employees are waiting for, or when the contractor's employees are waiting for the code officers to come. So it's not going to be the one size solution for everybody. But I think it's ripe and an opportune time. This is where we're at right now is the same where we were back in 1968 when my office went countywide. We had a lot of people who were retiring. There weren't people coming on board. They were looking at taking part-time assessors and putting them as full-time employees. Right now, I think I'm hearing the code officers call for this, even though I don't think that they know it yet. We keep hearing that the code officers want a centralized database for code enforcement. So being able to have that same database that smaller municipalities can't afford, they'll be able to, you know, we'll be able to afford a state-of-the-art code enforcement software. So I think it's ripe for a study to get everybody's concerns on boards, get them on the record, and see if it really does work. We deal with this in Seneca County right now with a county code enforcement office with our assessment function for the town of Covert. So we can see it happening correctly, but we won't know if it could work here unless we do that study.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jay. Okay, Mike Sigler and then Martha.
I just wanted to, ask, I don't know who to ask this question of, though. I mean, so, listen, I plan to vote for this just because I'm interested in the idea. Does having a unified code enforcement, though, necessarily mean that we have a unified code? And go.
Isn't that part of the study?
I guess so. So, yes, if that could be part of the study, that would be great.
Okay. Leslie's shaking her head madly. I'm going to let her weigh in on that, and then we'll hear from Martha.
I would say there's an opportunity to unify building code and to look at where New York State code is applied to building and development. I would hazard a guess that local municipalities may still want their own zoning codes that reflect the needs and character. And so there's just a difference. There's the conforming to zoning code and then there's building code. So
yeah.
I think that, you know, we'll flesh all that out in a study, but I wouldn't expect everything to fall into lockstep between municipalities.
Right. And I think towns that have planners like Lansing, which is fortunate to have CJ, would still need a planner, you know. So, yeah, Martha.
Yeah, this wouldn't replace planners.
Right.
And nothing replaces planners. The planners.
Yeah, you're indispensable. Attorneys,
true. No, I'm sorry. All municipal, you know, at the end of the study, all municipalities don't have to join in whatever it is. And, you know, some may want to join in the database. Some may want to have county staff do the fire code, but nothing else. Or some, there really can be a menu of options that's different for every municipality. So I will resend the Tioga County study, because even if you just read the executive summary, you'll get a good feeling for it. And I think it's a timely exploration for this. And Jay also mentioned to me the idea that you could have real specializations, to have somebody, we would, by combining the resource here, we'd save towns money. We have the opportunity to save towns money on their staff and professionalize the function and have people who are really expert in the energy code and somebody who's really expert in the fire code, and that we really could improve the service, speed up service and improve the service. But again, don't want to prejudge what the study would say, but these are some of the potential benefits.
Thanks, Martha. Are we ready to vote?
Yes.
Wait, Annie Hinson?
Really quick, everything else I was going to say was covered, but regarding energy code, I've heard from a lot of sustainable energy installers, and that is something that they would like, as well as just any kind of developers, people building houses or whatever. So this is something that they are looking forward to, at least looking into it. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Are we ready to vote?
Yes.
All right, Kathy.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
No.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Schill?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
13 ayes, 1 no.
Okay, people. Hey, Deb. Yeah. I have one appeal to my colleagues. I have two people that have been waiting for an OTR that has sat through this meeting for almost 3 hours. Is there any way that we could do the next one on the list, which is the multi-year OTR for Student Resource Navigator Initiative? Everyone has been sent the information via email, and Grace and Chris are both here to answer any questions.
Actually, the next one is actually HSC, Target.
Oh. Well, but I don't think that really changes the circumstances for these people who've been waiting for us for 3 hours. You shouldn't have done that, but sorry.
Just kidding.
So happy. You know, what's your pleasure, people? Can we do this?
Yes,
okay.
Let's do it.
Thank you.
All right. So, Shauna, you want to move this one, please?
Yes, I would like to move a multi-year OTR for Student Resource Navigator Initiative, funding $50,000 for each 2022,
2023,
and 24.
Okay, is that a second, Amanda? Okay.
Who seconded?
Amanda. So, discussion, people. Shauna, Amanda,
I'm happy to talk a little bit about this. So
this is a new program that essentially is collaborating with Cornell graduate students that will go into our community and act as navigators for different health equity issues. And I want to actually turn it over a little bit to Grace and Chris. Chris is also employed with CCE, and they can explain the program a little bit more. Just, you know, in 4 minutes, that would be great.
Thank you, Sean. I would defer to Grace on this. Grace, if you're... Okay.
Yeah. So this OTR is responding to data that we found that there are many existing resources that support health and well-being in the county that have been underutilized. And so the navigators that Shauna mentioned would be deployed in healthcare and community settings to help people make connections to those resources. And also crucially, we're seeing this as augmenting the capacity of the health department's community health workers, because when navigators are working with people who have complex needs, they're able to refer them to work with the community health workers. So we're seeing this in the short term as being able to increase these resource connections and have some immediate impact on people's lives. And then in the longer term, by tracking which resources are successful and which are not, we hope to get a better understanding of what the major barriers are to equitable access to health resources in our county so that we can continue to improve as we're making changes to programs to better meet needs.
Questions? Martha?
Yeah, I asked about... No, what was the title? The special $1.1 million grant we got, the public health department got for seven student fellows and plus a coordinator. And I didn't get any, when we asked Frank what they would do, he said, well, find something. He said, well, we'll do them, bring them into COVID work first, and then we'll have them try different things in our department. It sounded really, really like he wasn't sure. He'd have to figure out something for them to do. And frankly, I know that having managed volunteers in the past, I know it can be actually a lot of work to try to find something productive for people to do. This seems like something that would be good to do, and we have a grant to pay for 2 years for seven people to do something. I certainly am not going to support this until I hear a better answer of why those seven people couldn't do what's proposed here. I don't know why we would be funding this when we're getting a grant for something so similar for students. Same thing with students, including... So six students plus a graduate level sort of supervisor of them.
Okay, are we done?
Yeah, so I guess I'm a no.
Yeah, I'm happy to respond to that. So Frank specifically said that the funding for that program cannot be used for this. It was a grant program, and it was very, very specific to, he didn't know a lot about exactly what the grant funding would be able to go to. This is something that these two partners have actually been working with Sam Hilton for the past few months in recognizing what the needs of the county were. And so Sam Hilton was very in support of this programming. And this is actually, they're providing specific services as far as connecting providers with the people that need their help.
But if Frank said he doesn't, it's the grant is for something very specific, but he doesn't know what it's for.
He does not know how he's going to allocate the people. No. This position, the $50,000 is paying specifically for the coordination of services that Grace is going to provide. The actual students are volunteering their time and learning about mental, public health.
Okay. And presumably you've got 23 and 24 down here that we can't make that commitment It's just a 3-year request. Okay.
Right. Okay, Amanda?
Well, I don't know how I do this because I'm the seconder, but I want to move to put this first year, take this first year as a draw on the recovery fund.
Just make a motion
so
to amend.
That, even
yeah.
That's
friendly.
And that's friendly. Is that unfriendly to anyone? Doesn't look like it. Okay, do we have any questions from the... Okay. All right, so I guess we'll vote on the amendment. Mike Sigler.
I had a couple questions quickly. I was wondering, so who is this going to run through? Is it going to run through Cornell? Is it going to run through our health department? And
it's
the other thing
is through CCE, I think.
Well, one more question, and then you guys can just answer them all at one time. Is Cornell putting any money towards this? I mean, it's going to benefit us, obviously, but it's going to benefit primarily Cornell. So are they kicking in equal funds or something like that?
Thanks, Mike. Yeah. So the question is, who's this running through? So the volunteers will actually be drawn from across Cornell. And there'll be volunteers with CUGA Health Partners for various reasons. That sort of arrangement is already in place. And they'll be working, you know, this idea, which is about really, as Grace was saying, about connecting people up with resources that already exist. It's come out of a collaboration with CUGA Health Partners, with Cornell University, with CC, and with Tompkins County Health Department. Cornell is putting up, this is a way of leveraging the resources of Cornell, because they're going to, when you add up all the staff time and all the student hours that are going to go into this, it's a very high rate of leverage. And we have reasons for thinking that this will increase because we're drawing from diverse populations across Cornell to actually become these navigators. And as that experience becomes, you know, richer and more developed through this pilot, we expect that to expand. Similarly, for all the other entities involved, once the value proposition is proved, we anticipate that will draw in more money. This is a program that is based on ideas that have been run successfully throughout the United States. We've taken it, we've adapted it through collaboration with those partners who adapted to Tompkins County. And that's our proposal. This is really the most effective way we can think of. And when I say we, I mean those group of collaborators to address health equity in the county at the present time.
Does that answer your question, Mike, or do you have more?
It does. Just one more quick question. I mean, Frank's the guy that's going to be, I guess, the liaison for, or I don't know, is this going to be going through our health department at all? Like, what's the contact there, I guess?
We'll be liaising a lot with the community health worker program, which you may be aware, and there are documents, there's information given in the documents around this OTR to show the value of community health workers for various communities. So we'll be aligning our work with them to support and augment their capacities and potentialities, while also working through CHP. We'll be handling sort of some of the legal side because there are some issues around, you know, students and volunteers working in healthcare science. And Grace will be taking the lead on coordinating between the various different partners.
Okay, Henry, does your question relate to the amendment or the
amendment?
Oh, okay. All right. So yeah, go ahead.
Well, Chris, did you say this program is expected to make revenue in future years?
Yeah, there are various ways in which we see this as both a health equity proposal, but also something that actually draws in revenue. There are various movements, and I'll defer to Grace in a second on this. She's worked more on this particular point, that there are various ways in which this idea of connecting up community resources with healthcare providers is sort of an idea whose time has come. And all over the US, there are various movements to do this, and there are various kinds of funding proposals going through various legislatures in order to move on that, to move and direct funding towards that kind of work. And if Tompkins County can get itself in a pole position by having a really advanced working pilot for this, then we would be in a great shape to attract that money and draw it in. It also will show value to the different partners who will then internally fund, and that's part of the sustainability piece. Grace, anything else you wanted to add on that?
I think that's a great summary. Yeah, there are increasing public and private funding sources to support coordination of care between health and community services that clinical care only accounts for about 20% of health, and the rest of it is related to community and environmental conditions that are supported through various kinds of social programs and services. And so, as Chris mentioned, there's been legislation that's been introduced in both the federal House and Senate to create some funding for communities who are innovating in this way. And sometimes there have also been state pilots to try to support these kind of coordinated care systems. So we do see that that this is a trend across the country, and that there are some successful models to draw on with this work.
Okay, thanks.
So I want to be sure, following up on that, do you have plans to find other funding sources and revenue streams to support this after the 3-year OTR is over? Is that correct?
Yes, we do. Yes, we have a range of sustainability plans based on working with the partners that we're currently working with, because they will, once the value proposition has been proved, then it becomes sustainable in that sense. We're also applying for other grants at the moment. Even tonight, someone's writing another grant for us to help sort of fund this. So yes, we have a range of sustainability plans that I think are set out in the documents that we've forwarded.
Thank you, because, you know, this is very worthwhile. I can't argue with that. But what I don't want to do is seed another program that comes back at the end of 3 years and says, well, we've done this for 3 years. We want you to keep funding us forever, you know, which happens. So if you can allay my concerns about that, I'd be happy to vote for this.
I think the whole idea of value payments in the healthcare system is at heart an idea of trying to coordinate with community organizations in order to improve health outcomes and see what value that brings. This proposal that we're bringing here is a fantastic way, we think, for Tompkins County to move in that direction, so that we are in that position to draw on the funding mechanisms that are constantly being developed. And as Grace said, that's not just, you know, federal level, it's a state level. And it's the way that healthcare is actually working. Coordinated care ideas.
Okay. All right then. Any other questions? We ready to vote? Okay. Kathy.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
No.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslie Mapine Claiborne?
Not here anymore.
Okay. Dave McKenna?
He's not here anymore either.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
McKenna's gone.
Yes. Leslie Show?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Let's see, he's frozen.
He's asleep. They're dropping like flies.
I think he's frozen.
Okay. Party's over.
Oh, wait.
Mike? Sigler, it's your turn to vote.
Sorry, it dropped out. Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
No.
And ayes, two noes.
Thank you all for entertaining that process.
Okay. Martha, you have your hand up?
Yeah, we, Kathy Slaughter's been waiting, so.
Oh.
Wait a minute. Don't we have the main motion to vote on?
No, I think that's what was voted on. It was a friendly.
Oh, amendment. That was a friendly?
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Not want to vote first. Got it. Done. All right.
Okay.
If that, done. If Kathy doesn't mind coming back. So, all right. So that's where we would start tomorrow, I guess.
Yeah. Annie, I'm going to ask that you supply or have Diane Cowan supply the answers to whatever questions occasioned the delay of consideration of that
I texted her. I think she's going to be able to come, or I'll have her provide it in writing.
Right, because we can finish tomorrow night if we have that information. I would be willing to keep going, except that we're going to have to come back tomorrow anyway. So,
could we get a summary from Dan again, the screen, see where we are?
Sure, if he's still with us and awake, we can.
You got it. All right, let me.
Deborah, could you just get the sense of the room, if we could? If we could get Diane, what's the sense on, do we want to try to finish tonight and not come back tomorrow?
Well, no, we can't. We got too many different things. I just thought because Kathy was waiting here, but we have to be back.
I want
to
go.
Okay, so we're up 200% on the levy. And where are we with fund balance?
$992 and, $992,851.
Okay. All right, does that make everyone happy?
We only did like 12,000 targets tonight.
Dan, could you make it bigger or zoom in on that top part? Old eyes, even bigger would be great. I need new glasses. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All righty. So let me see if I understand. The difference between the recommended draw in reserves and the amended draw in reserves would additional ding on fund balance from the things we've passed tonight.
Yes, totaling basically $1 million.
Okay. Does anybody want Daniel to send us a copy of this amended before tomorrow's meeting?
Yeah, okay. I was planning on.
Thank you, Daniel. We will
appreciate
that.
Not a problem.
All right, everybody.